AM 1320 KCTC, Sacramento's Left Channel. Streaming live at 1320leftchannel.com.
CBS News. I'm Hartley Karn. The winter storm that glazed ice across the mid and southwest like frosting turned out the lights for hundreds of thousands of people. CBS's Kelly Cobiella is in Oklahoma.
Here in Muskogee, the damage is pretty widespread. People are dealing with it in different ways. Significant amount of people in this town, 8,000 customers out of 38,000 population total, are without power. And more people are losing power as the days wear on. And some of that is because of the ice that's already on the trees, bringing down power lines.
That system is petering out as a winter weather maker, but in its wake.
Slow down. Just be very careful. If you can, stay at home.
Well, if you don't have to be out in this, then don't be out in it.
The cold snap in California hit the citrus groves, too.
The freeze is taking more of a toll than it did in 1998. That was the last time we had a freeze of this kind. And that year, growers lost $700 million.
That's CBS's Sandra Hughes in Ventura, California. The Pentagon has already started the flow of reinforcements into Iraq. The first 3,000 to 4,000 troops are arriving now. General George Casey.
Yes, there are still difficulties with the Iraqi security forces, and that has been a challenge. And with the increased deployment of coalition forces, it will enable us to increase the level of support we are providing to those forces.
Casey says if Iraqi forces step up, we'll see a real difference in the country by late summer, early fall. The reason the kids were home from school, the reason federal offices and the stock markets were closed today, it's a federal holiday, Martin Luther King Day, and that is the Liberty Bell ringing in honor of King.
Dr. King became one of the most articulate anti-war spokespeople in America. What he said about the Vietnam War, I think he would apply today to the war in Iraq. We must all find our own ways to protest, and I'm sure he meant our own nonviolent ways to protest.
Reverend David Keyes in Atlanta. In Monroe, Louisiana, Ricardo Nance Jr. is in jail for burning his own mother's home down. She told him go get a job if he wanted to live there. Told police it made him angry. Human growth hormone may or may not keep you younger, but CBS's Barry Bagnato has a study that says it may not be worth trying it.
The risks of human growth hormone far outweigh its benefits, say Stanford researchers in a study in the Annals of Internal Medicine. It can slightly increase muscle mass and decrease fat, they say, but they add that healthy elderly people can achieve the same benefit with exercise without breaking much of a sweat. Growth hormone is widely promoted as an anti-aging treatment. The FDA doesn't approve it for that use.
Japan's space agency is recommending their moon mission be scrapped, this after more than a decade of delays. The plan had been to send a probe called Lunar A to plant seismic sensors to learn more about La Luna at its core. Now the plan is to sell those sensors to other space programs. This is CBS News.
So you're a consultant?
Yes, sir.
What's with the wall of sticky notes?
It's my small business accounting system. Unpaid invoices go on the purple ones.
And the green?
New customers.
So unpaid bills are the yellow ones.
How'd you know?
I took a shot. You know, there's an easier way to manage your business.
Yeah?
Yeah, QuickBooks. You can be up and running in under 15 minutes. With just a few clicks, QuickBooks software lets you write checks, send invoices, see who's paid and who hasn't.
I'll switch. So, need a couple hundred sticky notes?
I'm going to pass on that. QuickBooks. Better, faster, simpler. Get it at Office Max, Best Buy, or Amazon.com.
Out of ink? Run into Office Depot. With over 500 ink, toner, and fax supplies guaranteed in-store and thousands more online, Office Depot has what you need at unbeatable prices. Save more by recycling empty ink and toner cartridges. When you think ink, let Office Depot lend you a hand. Office Depot, taking care of business.
Whoa, Office Depot!
See store for details.
Tonight in Los Angeles, it's the Golden Globes. CBS's Steve Futterman is there.
The film with the most nominations tonight is Babel, starring Brad Pitt and Cate Blanchett.
Why can't you just relax? Why are you so stressed?
Babel's up for 7 Golden Globes. Right behind with 6 nominations is the Martin Scorsese mob film The Departed.
I got an informer in my outfit.
Both Babel and The Departed are up for the top award, Best Dramatic Film. Other nominees are The Queen, Bobby, and Little Children. Among the films up for Best Musical or Comedy Film are Borat.
Should I pay compliments to the people?
And Dreamgirls. Steve Futterman, CBS News, Beverly Hills.
Miss New Jersey is stepping down from the post, turning the crown over to her runner-up. She's pregnant. The rules say Ashley Harder cannot compete for Miss America while expecting. Harley Carnes, CBS News.
Now you, Sacramento home.
New rule, stop whining about gas prices. It's good that it costs a lot, and not just because the sales tax will help pay for our twice-a-year governor elections. It's also good if it makes you think of walking the three blocks from your house to Del Taco instead of taking the Land Cruiser. Gasoline costs a lot because we have to find it, bribe or kill the people who live on top of it. Extract it, refine it, ship it, and pump it. You'll pay $2 a gallon, and you'll like it because you know what the alternative is, riding on the bus with poor people. New rule, call things what they are. If your morning coffee contains crushed ice, whipped cream, and caramel, it's a milkshake.
Laughing at the truth, AM 1320.
From our studios in New York City, this is the Rachel Maddow Show on Air America Radio.
The following takes place between 6 p.m. and 7 p.m.
Welcome to the Rachel Maddow Show here on Air America Radio, now with more time zone specificity. It is Monday, the 15th of January, 2007. Today is the national holiday to honor the birthday of Martin Luther King Jr. Thank you very much for joining us on MLK Day. 6 minutes past the hour right now. Coming up on the show this hour, the president's ongoing attempts to sell his plan for Iraq to the American people.
Sometimes you're the commander-in-chief, sometimes you're the educator-in-chief, and a lot of times you're both when it comes to war.
More on the president's greedy new professions in just a moment. Also on the show this hour, we'll get an update on New Orleans from Billy Southern, an attorney at the Capital Appeals Project in Louisiana, author of the forthcoming book, Down in New Orleans, Reflections on a Drowned City, plus a strange story about riding the subway in your underpants. That's all coming up. But first, a quick update on a few of today's top headlines, starting as we do every day here on the Rachel Maddow Show with news from Iraq and life during wartime. At least three bombs went off in Baghdad today. One was a suicide car bomb at an Iraqi army checkpoint, which killed four Iraqi soldiers, wounded another three, and set fire to two military vehicles. Another roadside bomb targeted a police car in southeastern Baghdad and killed three policemen. Another roadside bomb in Baghdad today injured two policemen and two civilians. In Mosul, which is in the far north of Iraq, more than 200 miles north of Baghdad, a giant suicide car bomb slammed into an Iraqi army patrol today. That killed seven people and wounded 28. Another two people were killed in a drive-by while they were selling black market gasoline, also south of Mosul. An off-duty policeman was shot to death today. Yesterday in Iraq, Baghdad police reported 78 people either killed or found dead. The U.S. military yesterday also announced that two American soldiers were killed by roadside bombs in Baghdad. Is anybody else noticing that the current violence in Iraq, the ongoing violence in Iraq, is getting like zero coverage in most media now? While everybody's focusing on Bush's Iraq war escalation plan, it's like we've got X amount of appetite for news with the word Iraq in it. And if our news appetite is filled up with articles about a speech in Washington, then articles about actual Americans and actual Iraqis actually dying in actual Iraq, then those have to go by the wayside because our quota is full. We're getting more details now trickling out about what exactly the Democrat-led Congress can do to try to stop at least the escalation of the war in Iraq. There are two houses of Congress, right? The House and the Senate, both controlled by Democrats now. On the House side, there's a big Democratic majority. On the Senate side, there is still a Democratic majority, but it's just one seat. And one of those Democratic seats is Joe Lieberman's, so it's kind of hard to feel super confident about that one. But on Friday's show, you may recall me pointing out that Jack Murtha on the House side, Jack Murtha is in charge of funding the Pentagon. He heads up the Defense Appropriations Subcommittee, which means he has enormous influence over the funding of military matters. That's really important for what's going to happen in the war now. Murtha said last week that he will use his position as head of that subcommittee to cut off funds for the escalation in Iraq. That is a big deal. The next military funding bill that's going through Congress is the Supplemental War Funding Bill, which is due next month. Yesterday, the National Security Advisor, Stephen Hadley, said, we can still fund the escalation even if Jack Murtha wants to try to stop us. Even without that supplemental funding bill that's going to Congress next month, we still have enough money to fund the escalation. That kind of seems like a big deal to me. Here's Stephen Hadley, National Security Advisor on ABC's This Week with George Stephanopoulos.
We have money in the 07 budget, which has been appropriated by the Congress to move these troops to Iraq, and the president will be doing that.
In other words, neener, neener, Congress, neener, neener, American people. I think what he's saying is that the Democrats logistically can't stop the escalation. There's nothing that Congress can do to stop it. They've already got the funding they need for it. Wow. Which also raises the question of whether or not the Democrats are going to be able to get it together to try to stop it anyway. Jack Murtha himself said yesterday that the Democrats' options for stopping the war, for stopping the escalation, may depend on how many troops the White House can rush into Iraq before that funding request goes to Congress next month. Meanwhile, in the Senate, on the other side of Congress, the Democratic senator who has as much influence over military matters in the Senate as Murtha does in the House would be Carl Levin of Michigan. Carl Levin of Michigan said last week that he is very strongly against the war escalation.
In fact, I believe that the policy will help prolong the violence in Iraq and make it harder to achieve this goal while increasing the loss of American lives and treasure.
After saying that on Friday, Carl Levin said yesterday on CNN that despite the fact that he's super, super, super against the escalation plan, he's not in favor of cutting off funding for it. Arg. John Edwards echoed my thoughts on the issue in his Martin Luther King Day speech yesterday at the Riverside Church in Manhattan.
If you're in Congress and you know that this war is going in the wrong direction and you know that we should not escalate this war in Iraq, it is no longer okay to study your options and keep your own private counsel. Silence is betrayal.
John Edwards went on to say, speak out and stop this escalation now. You have the power to prohibit the president from spending any money to escalate the war. Use it. End quote. Amen, John Edwards. And take that, Carl Levin. John Edwards, actually, in that quote, if you're paying attention to the politics of the things right now, actually was criticizing Hillary Clinton there, not Carl Levin. But honestly, from my perspective, Carl Levin is the man on the hot seat right now for the Democrats about whether or not the Democrats are actually going to stop the war. And I care a heck of a lot more right now about stopping the war right now than I do about who's running strongest for president in 2 years. The man who actually is president for two more years. Sorry. Did an interview for 60 Minutes yesterday. The president strolling through the woods at Camp David, along with CBS reporter Scott Pelley.
Do you believe as Commander-in-Chief you have the authority to put the troops in there no matter what the Congress wants to do?
I think I've got, in this situation, I do, yeah. Now, I fully understand they could try to stop me from doing it, but I've made my decision, and we're going forward.
You think that's a little Freudian insight into the White House worrying about what the Democrats are going to do on the war?
They could try to stop me.
He doesn't sound terribly sure about what the Congress might do about Iraq. That said, he does also seem a little bit confused about what he himself has already done in Iraq.
Do you think you owe the Iraqi people an apology for not doing a better job?
No, I don't. That we didn't do a better job or they didn't do a better job?
Well, that the United States did not do a better job in providing security after the invasion.
Not at all. I think I'm proud of the efforts we did. We liberated that country from a tyrant. I think the Iraqi people owe the American people a huge debt of gratitude.
They owe us a huge debt of gratitude. Prepare, O American citizenry, for the avalanche of thank you cards. This is unbelievable to me. You know what this means? This means that George Bush and Dick Cheney still think that we were greeted as liberators. After all of this, 4 years on, they still think that. Cheney himself did Fox News Sunday yesterday, and he unveiled his new way of thinking about ye olde war in Iraq.
Now, the United States doesn't have the stomach to finish the task in Iraq. We put at risk what we've done in all of those other locations out there.
This is the new idea. The stomach for war.
They say the United States doesn't have the stomach for the fight in this long war against terror.
Apparently this is Cheney's new war metaphor. He used it 5 times in one interview. The stomach.
that if you kill enough Americans, you can force them to quit, that we don't have the stomach for the fight.
Dick Cheney talking repeatedly about his stomach and our national stomach is gross enough. It would be gross enough if he didn't also audibly kind of belch or retch a little bit, as he does here in this next quote, while talking about his stomach.
We have to prevail, and we have to have the stomach for the fight long term.
Now, what was I saying about our national stomach?
The United States doesn't have the stomach for a long war.
Dick Cheney, the Iraq War. As the stomach turns. Cheney's former chief of staff, Scooter Libby, goes on trial tomorrow. Cheney's expected to testify on Scooter Libby's behalf. This is a historic occasion. This will be the first time a sitting vice president has ever testified in a criminal case. Dick Cheney, of course, with his utmost respect for the law and due process, went out of his way in yesterday's interview to not prejudice the legal proceedings by, you know, talking about Scooter Libby or what he thinks of Scooter Libby now that Scooter Libby's on trial and Cheney's part of the defense case.
I believe he's one of the more honest men I know. He's a good man, and I obviously appreciate very much his service on my staff over the years.
Oh, scratch that whole not discussing the pending legal matter thing, then. In addition to Dick Cheney, this trial is going to be kind of a Washington heavyweight sort of trial. In addition to Dick Cheney, Ari Fleischer is expected to testify. Bob Novak, Bob Woodward, all expected to take turns in the witness chair during Libby's trial. A veritable kiddie choir for me of men whom I would not trust as far as I could throw them. That's why every day here on The Rachel Maddow Show, I prefer to take my testimony from the one and only Kent Jones.
Thanks, Rachel. House Democrats have introduced a bill that would lower interest rates for some types of student loans, said California Democrat George Miller, who introduced the bill. This legislation will be a vital first step toward helping lower college costs for millions of low- and middle-income students while keeping our promises to taxpayers to maintain responsible spending. Representative Miller said the House would vote on it Wednesday. An estimated 5.5 million students receive subsidized loans. At the existing rate of 6.8%, a typical borrower with a $13,800 subsidized student loan debt would pay about $22,100 over 15 years. Mm. When cut to 3.4%, the same borrower would pay $17,700, $4,400 less. Miller says recent graduates should be spending that money on bad beer, credit card debt, and hopeless romantic entanglements. Good news, vinyl junkies. At the recent Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas, a company called Ion Audio is introducing a device that will convert your dusty old vinyl LPs to digital files that can be listened to on iPods and other MP3 players.
Finally.
Due in June and costing $400, the ITT CB10 has a turntable that connects to your PC and records the album it is playing on either an MP3 or a CD format. Here's a demonstration. Here's what an old vinyl LP sounds like. Okay, and here's what it sounds like converted to MP3. Okay, Ion Audio warns there is one downside. An old Styx LP will still sound like Styx. Later on Kent Jones Now, designers put finishing touches on Creationist Museum. Built in just 6 days. More or less. Rachel?
Thank you very much, Kent Jones. You know how many people are kicking themselves thinking, you know what? I held on to my records for what? 3 years? 4 years? 10 years? Before I finally realized there'd be no way to convert them to CDs, and I gave them away.
You don't give up on science.
No.
They figured it out.
You should have paid for the storage space after all. I've got all my records at my parents' house in California.
Of course you do.
Now I'm going to have to ship them out here.
That's where they belong.
Hey, Mom and Dad, you kept the records, right? Uh-oh.
Honey, got something to tell you.
19 minutes past the hour. It's the Rachel Maddow Show here on Air America Radio. We're going to New Orleans next.
Guess where I am going? I will give you a hint. It is a booze-fueled sex romp where anything goes.
The Rachel Maddow Show.
You are correct, sir.
Visit maddowonline.com to read Rachel's blog. Air America Radio.
Air America Radio. Are you losing your hair? Fight back with Avacor. Now with Boost, which gives you visibly thicker hair with a first application.
I'm 20 years old and I've been losing my hair for 3 years. I started using Avacor and my hair stopped falling out. It's working.
Well, I'm 72 years old and I can tell you honestly, I have a fuller, healthier head of hair now than I did when I was 18 years old. Avacor really worked.
Whether you're 20, 72, or any age in between, Avacor works. And Avacor with Boost will improve your hair's appearance the same day you receive your order. Call now and you can get 3 months of Avacor free with your order, plus a free gift from Avacor's hair care line of products. Call 1-800-884-6270. That's 1-800-884-6270. This is a limited time offer, so call right now. 1-800-884-6270. That's 1-800-884-6270.
Rachel Maddow Show on Air America Radio. Pop the hood. Let's see what's making that noise.
Now is the time to make real the promises of democracy. Now is the time to rise from the dark and desolate valley of segregation to the sunlit path of racial justice. Now is the time to lift our nation from the quicksands of racial injustice to the solid rock of brotherhood. Now is the time to make justice a reality for all of God's children.
Welcome back. 24 minutes past the hour. This is the Rachel Maddow Show here on Air America Radio. Thank you for joining us on the national holiday honoring the birthday of Martin Luther King. It's time to wade into the old mainstream now to see if there's any gold worth panning for among today's top stories.
Eureka!
The Rachel Maddow Show front page story today is about New Orleans. It's been about 500 days since Hurricane Katrina. Today in New Orleans, hundreds of people who used to live in public housing projects in the city, projects that are slated to be torn down, they literally climbed through fences today to try to start cleaning up public housing sites in an attempt to show that that housing ought not be torn down. The lack of housing in New Orleans is just one of the ongoing disasters that confronts the city. Last week, you may remember that I commended to you an opinion piece from the New York Times written by Billy Southern. Billy's been on this show before. He's a lawyer who works on death penalty cases in New Orleans. He's going to be my guest next, joining us live in just a couple of minutes. But if you didn't have a chance to read his opinion piece last week, one of the things it was about was one of the murders in New Orleans recently. There were six murders in one 24-hour period. In the first week of January, six in one day, and only about 200,000 people live in New Orleans now. But one of the early January murders, the one that Billy wrote about, was of a young woman named Helen Hill, a white woman, a filmmaker who lived with her husband Paul and their two-year-old. Nobody knows who or why, but somebody broke into their house two Thursdays ago, shot and killed Helen Hill, and then shot Paul three times while he stood in their bathroom holding their son. Paul was shot three times but survived. Their son was not shot. He was uninjured. I'm going to talk with Billy in just a moment about Paul and Helen, about life in New Orleans right now and how the city's residents are trying to stand up against their city falling apart. I thought it might be good preparation for that discussion to introduce you to a band called The Troublemakers. The lead singer of this band, The Troublemakers, was Paul. Paul Gaylionis, the doctor, the man who survived that shooting last week, which his wife did not survive. This song here is The Troublemakers theme. We'll play a little bit of it to lead you into this. Billy Southern is my guest coming up next here on The Rachel Maddow Show.
Show on Air America Radio.
Homeowners, before you write one more check for your high interest rate debts, stop. If you want to simplify your bills and get cash, call and ask about a combo loan from America's number one home loan lender, Countrywide. It's a refinance that you could use to combine your first mortgage, your second mortgage, your car loan, and all your high-rate credit card debt into one easy loan with one low monthly payment. You get the stability of a low fixed rate, and consolidating at a lower rate could save you hundreds of dollars every month and give you the cash you need. No one can do what Countrywide can. Whatever your financial situation, don't wait for rates to go up. Call right now and ask for a combo loan. 1-800-981-2980. That's 1-800-981-2980. Countrywide Home Loans is an equal housing lender. Restrictions apply, so call and apply now. 1-800-981-2980. 1-800-981-2980.
Okay, this is how I run my business. I put receipts at the front of the shoebox. Unpaid invoices go in the back.
But, hon, what happens if you drop the shoebox?
I might cry a little.
You know, there's an easier way to manage your business. Use QuickBooks. It's so simple, you can be up and running in under 15 minutes. With just a few clicks, QuickBooks software lets you send invoices, see who's paid you and who hasn't, and get ready for tax time.
Great. What'll I do with my shoebox?
Put shoes in it? Just throwing it out there.
QuickBooks. Better, faster, simpler. Get it at Staples, Office Depot, or Sam's Club.
Have you read or seen the latest? There's more good news for those with arthritis and joint or back pain. Results from a recent study report that a group of orthopedic doctors rated Aleve as the number one most effective over-the-counter brand when it comes to relief of minor arthritis pain. That's right. Aleve was rated number one for pain relief by orthopedic doctors. Ask your doctor about the good news. Ask your doctor about Aleve. Use as directed. Survey of 260 orthopedic surgeons conducted April 2006.
Rachel Maddow Show on Air America Radio. Visit MaddowOnline.com to read Rachel's blog.
But ever since the founding fathers of our nation dreamed this dream, America has been something of a schizophrenic personality. On the one hand, we have proudly professed the noble principles of democracy. On the other hand, we have sadly practiced the very antithesis of those principles.
Welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. This is the Rachel Maddow Show here on Air America Radio. And, you know, as a person who talks for a living, there's one person you don't really want to talk after. It's the Martin Luther King, really. I guess we all do to a certain extent in some broader way. But literally, the sound of my voice after the sound of his doesn't feel right to me. Anyway, welcome back. 35 minutes past the hour now. A couple stories we're keeping an eye on. Active duty service members opposed to the U.S. involvement in Iraq gathered today in Washington, D.C. to demand the withdrawal of American troops in Iraq. Yes, I said active duty service members. Wow. Under the Military Whistleblower Protection Act, members of the armed forces can send appeals to their members of Congress without fear of reprisal, even though, broadly speaking, members of the active duty military don't have the same free speech rights as American civilians. Specifically, they don't necessarily have the same rights to criticize political and military leaders or criticize actions of the U.S. government. But this appeal for redress, this addressing an appeal to your member of Congress, is a loophole for free speech for members of the military, allowing them to speak to their member of Congress. More than 20 active duty service members and about 100 of their supporters appeared at today's rally in Washington, D.C. More than 1,000 active duty members of the U.S. military have now signed appeals for redress, and they will be given to supportive Congress members tomorrow. Also, here's a little something that went unnoticed in the hubbub last week. Senator Jim Webb of Virginia, the man who beat George Allen, In Jim Webb's very first day on the job in the Senate, he introduced a bill called the Post-9/11 Veterans Educational Assistance Act of 2007. It's a measure designed to better the GI Bill from the post-World War II era. It's an educational package that makes it easier for people who have served in the military since 9/11 to complete a college education. Participating vets would get a monthly stipend of $1,000 and money for tuition and books, which is significantly more than they would get on the old Montgomery GI Bill. Those are some of the stories that we're keeping an eye on today. Last week, a friend of mine wrote an op-ed for the New York Times, which I commended to you on this program. Billy Southern is an anti-death penalty lawyer and writer living in New Orleans. He's working on a book that's forthcoming that's called Down in New Orleans. It's a book about the realities of American poverty and racism revealed by Hurricane Katrina. It's due to be published by the University of California Press. Billy Southern joins us live from home in New Orleans. Hi, Billy. How are you?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for talking to us. The op-ed you wrote in the New York Times last week was really moving. Thank you for writing it. I know that I emailed you about it after it came out. I wonder if you could recap for people the main subject of your opinion piece, which is about your friends Helen Hill and Paul, I assume you'll say his last name, Gay-Lunas?
Paul Gay-Lunas.
Gay-Lunas, who was your doctor.
Yeah, he was my doctor, and he is a tremendous and terrific human being. Helen and Paul were in their shotgun apartment down in the downtown neighborhood of Marigny here in New Orleans, I guess about a week ago now, and maybe a little bit more than a week, and an intruder came in and shot and killed Helen and shot Paul several times while he held their 2-year-old child. In a part of the rising and awful tide of violence that is sort of sweeping the city.
Is there any clue as to why they were targeted? Was it a burglary, or do you have any? Is there anybody have any sense of what might have led to this?
I think it was a random act of violence. There was a robbery underway a few doors down, and the police had responded. And it appears likely that that it was simply awful luck.
Wow. You know, I know that Helen is one of the people whose photo was held at the march last week by residents of New Orleans, people who were marching against the recent, not necessarily recent even, against the violence that's racking the city and the crime that's racking the city. Do you feel like it's reached such a point now that people are willing to do something different to try to change the crime and violence situation in New Orleans? Is there a critical mass of outrage at this point?
Well, at this point, what you know, the sort of thing that I feel like is we're down here, we're working so hard as individual citizens, and all of us, everyone who's been who lives down here in New Orleans, including Paul and Helen, who came down here to basically for Paul to serve the poor through his medical practice and for Helen to teach art and to make her films. You know, all of us are down here working so hard to make this work. And frankly, you know, I think the march is a great thing and reflects real citizen commitment to change. But in my mind, there's never really been any question that the citizens here are committed to change. And what seems more probable to me is that what we really need is some genuine assistance from government, from you know, from our government locally here, and then from the national government. And you know, in the absence of that, I'm just not sure what us as individual citizens can do to rebuild the school system, to rebuild the levee system, you know, to make this a decent, functional, and healthy city. You know, it wasn't that way before the storm, and it's not that way now. And so many of the factors that led to it being, you know, such an abysmal failure for its residents before the storm are the very same difficulties we face now. They're simply magnified by everything that we've already been through.
One of the debates that happens nationally about New Orleans is how much local blame there should be on the local politicians, specifically how much local blame, Mayor Ray Nagin should get. He was certainly the target of a lot of criticism last week, locally and nationally, I think. I wonder, as somebody who's a liberal, who's a progressive, who desperately wants New Orleans to come back better than it ever was, I wonder how much if I should resist that criticism of the local authorities, because I think it's become an excuse for the national government to discharge its responsibility.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think go ahead and criticize Nagin. I think that's just fine. That just does nothing to let the Bush administration and the federal government off the hook. You know, these are people who are ideologically committed to gutting the role of the federal government in our lives. And this is the consequence of it. So when there are inept local officials like we have here, you know, the citizens, it's, you know, us people here who are left holding the bag, because there is no safety net beneath that. So you know, I wouldn't be at all reluctant to criticizing the local officials here, but I definitely would point out that all of this is a sort of the natural consequence of this fetishism of sort of undermining the role of government in people's lives. And this is the natural consequence. It's this sort of Hobbesian city where, you know, people can't be safe, where children don't get educated, and where the primary function of the city, you know, providing for its most vulnerable residents has been, you know, clearly and obviously undermined, not only during Hurricane Katrina, but with all of these recent murders, such that, you know, I don't walk on the streets at night, and I don't know anyone who does. You know, we live here in this sort of like terror state. You know, I listen on the radio, and there's a lead-in on the news, and it says, you know, bungled rebuilding effort, and you know, then it goes on to explain whether they're talking about Baghdad or New Orleans. But that's basically where we're at here. You know, it feels like to those of us who live here that but for the great success of the saints, that nothing good is going on here. That you know, that the only thing good going on, the rebuilding effort, is our national football team.
In case you're just joining us, our guest is Billy Southern, who's a staff attorney at the Capitol Appeals Project, author of the forthcoming book Down in New Orleans: Reflections on a Drowned City. I gotta admit that I'm a Patriots fan, but the prospect of the Saints going to the Super Bowl is kind of a national dream at this point. It must actually be having kind of a palpable effect.
I think it would be hard exactly to express how happy people are and how joyous this makes people, you know, especially to sort of redefine the Superdome, this sort of national symbol of you know, sort of tragedy, to sort of redefine that into, you know, a real success story. And, you know, I'm not a huge football fan. You know, my wife's not a huge football fan, but, you know, but we watch the games and we're into it, and, you know, and everyone else is here too, is really into it here too. And I think it's lifting the spirits of people that we feel like, you know, this is one good thing that, you know, that's going right.
Billy, do you think that people who don't live in or around New Orleans should come to the city and visit as tourists and see for themselves and spend money? Is that something that would be helpful at this point? Is that something that people should feel is morbid at this point? What do you think?
Oh, I think that people should come here. You know, for all of the tragedy of New Orleans, it remains, you know, a great, great, great American city. You know, maybe it's a reflection of the place that, you know, despite, you know, decades of mismanagement, despite natural disaster, despite all of these awful things, that the people here are amazing and the city is amazing and it presents a kind of culture and life that all these awful things haven't managed to stamp out. So, yes, definitely people should come here. And though I'm a reluctant New Orleans booster right this minute, you know, everyone, you know, I'm always trying to convince people to move here because it's a great American city and it needs people's help.
Billy Southern, thanks for joining us. Look forward to talking to you again soon.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you.
Thanks. Billy Southern is a staff attorney at the Capital Appeals Project. We've put a link to the website for the Capital Appeals Project at mattoonline.com today. We've also put a link, once again, to his opinion piece that ran in the New York Times last week, which if you have not read it, you ought to. It is 45 minutes past the hour right now. You're listening to The Rachel Maddow Show. It's the national holiday honoring the birthday of Martin Luther King Jr. We'll be playing some more clips from Dr. King's speeches. We'll also be talking about black justice, about racial inequality, and the Democratic economic populist agenda with Algernon Austin coming up next hour. We've got Kent Jones joining me next. Stay tuned. It's The Rachel Maddow Show.
The Rachel Maddow Show on Air America Radio.
Hey, this is Rachel Maddow. You know, the price of gold has risen substantially in the past few years, and many experts are forecasting that gold's rise has just begun. Why? Well, for one thing, OPEC nations are beginning to switch their reserves from dollars to euros and yen instead. How does that affect you and me? Well, it could lead to inflation. And historically, inflation makes gold rise. Add budget deficits and geopolitical concerns to the mix, and gold becomes one important answer for protecting your family's financial future. For centuries, gold has been sought after and amassed to provide financial security. You can call my friends at ITM Trading. 1-888-OWN-GOLD. That's 1-888-OWN-GOLD. Now's the time to buy gold. It's really very simple. Just call ITM Trading, 1-888-OWN-GOLD. That's 1-888-OWN-GOLD. They'll answer all your questions and send you a free information packet about owning gold to get you started.
Show on Air America Radio. Government inspected and disapproved.
Like bad meat. That is kind of a weird bump in. Like we're not approved by government inspectors. Yeah, like we're a little rancid. Anyway. 50 and a half minutes past the hour.
From the Rachel Maddow Show, now it's Kent Jones Now. With Kent Jones Now.
Hello, Dateline Decisions. A new study in the journal Current Biology says that a snap decision can be better than a more considered response when facing quick quizzes. Study participants were asked to pick out a symbol on a screen of more than 650 identical symbols. Those who made quick, instinctive decisions did better at correctly identifying the symbol than those who gave a longer, more thought-out answer.
Hmm.
One of the authors of the study, Li Xiaoping of the University College London, said, quote, "This finding seems counterintuitive. You would think that if people to make more accurate decisions when given the time to look properly. Instead, they performed better when given almost no time to think," unquote. Xiaoping adds that our instincts are often silenced by our reasoning conscious mind, but cautions that snap judgments are not always the best judgments. For instance, my very first response after reading this story was bonobo poop. So thank you, reasoning conscious mind, for vetoing that one. Rachel?
Scold that bonobo!
It's not okay. It's not okay.
Snap judgment!
Yeah.
I wonder if that's because we have animal instincts that are left over from our time where there were predators of us. And
well
so we've
be.
Got like weird
yeah.
animal judgment stuff. That
I think he's warning us about overthinking.
Huh.
There's parts of our brain that will override the one that may be correct sometimes.
I think I've never overthought anything.
Okay, then. Whatever.
I've considered it over and over again, and I've decided, never mind.
But not right. poop.
All right. Thank you. All right. You know, every day here on the Rachel Maddow Show, Kent, yeah. we do enjoy poking a sharp stick at the soft white underbelly of bonobo poop. Flipping over the day's news to show you the slimy, scheming political tactics at work underneath. Today's underbelly political tactic, it's one that I very much enjoy pronouncing. Junta.
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 Junta. Military junta, a form of government wherein the political power resides with the military. I have been talking recently on the show about the military taking over all the intelligence agencies.
Yeah.
Right? And it was like they were taking over one. First of all, Donald Rumsfeld created his own little defense intelligence subcommittee that came up with lots of the brilliant intelligence that led to the war in Iraq. And then they started putting uniformed or retired military personnel in charge of all the different intelligence agencies.
Right.
It's basically now a complete takeover after Mike McConnell, Admiral Mike McConnell, became the National Intelligence Director. Well, the New York Times' big Sunday Times scoop yesterday was about how the military taking over intelligence has led to the military snooping, needless to say, without a warrant, on hundreds of Americans' banking and credit records. They're supposed to have, by law, the military has this one small domestic role to play. We are not a country where we're supposed to have our own troops policing our own people. It doesn't work that way here, right? This isn't East Germany. We're supposed to have they're supposed to have this small domestic role only in protecting their military bases in the U.S. from domestic threats. They have now parlayed that what's supposed to be a very small domestic law enforcement role. They have now used that foot in the door. To give themselves basically the job of the FBI in the United States, except without any of the constitutional safeguards that we have given ourselves to protect our rights from the incursions of the FBI, to protect our rights from the kind of all-powerful domestic spying and law enforcement rights that we give to the government, right? So the military takes care of intelligence. Now, the military taking care of domestic law enforcement now, and the military therefore is responsible for taking care of our privacy rights. Is if there's one thing I want to entrust to the U.S. military, it's my privacy rights. Yeah, so in that sense, welcome to your American junta.
Junta.
One other junta story for you today. You might recall from the show my ongoing year-long tizzy about the fact that civilian contractors working in Iraq aren't subject to, you know, law. We've got 100,000, at least, civilian contractors working in Iraq. And if one of them murders somebody or rapes somebody or robs a bank or jaywalks or whatever, they're not subject to any law. They're not actually accountable to Iraqi law. That was one of the things that old Paul Bremer did when he ran the Coalition Provisional Authority. He made sure that no Americans in Iraq would be subject to Iraqi law whatsoever. That's one way to make them respect us. It's also true that they're not subject to American domestic law because they're not operating in the United States. They're not subject to military law because they're not members of the military, and they're not subject to international law because the United States doesn't submit any of its citizens to international law. So I've been kind of going on about this for more than a year on the show. And about 2 weeks ago, I talked about this little noticed provision in the latest Pentagon funding bill that a blogger found, which says that now contractors are under law. Now contractors in the newly have been brought under the auspices of some law. They've been brought specifically under the auspices of military law. That change has finally earned some mainstream press attention. It's on the front page today in the Washington Post. And the Washington Post helpfully notes that, yeah, hey, it's great that contractors are finally under some sort of law. But perhaps it's a little worrying that somewhere approaching 100,000 American civilians are now subject to military justice instead of normal American justice. If that doesn't worry you, we've got a story coming up just after the break here about how military justice works right now, about innocence until proven guilt in military justice, and how far it strays away from what we think of as our American ideals. That's coming up. It's 56 minutes past the hour. The Rachel Maddow Show.
The Rachel Maddow Show on Air America Radio. This is the Nation Minute on Air America Radio.
Words have never been President Bush's strong suit, nor has listening. He doesn't particularly care what anyone else thinks, which is why a congressional resolution opposing escalating the war in Iraq won't change Bush's mind. But there is one thing our president does understand: money. Only the power of the purse will get Bush's attention. If Congress threatens to defund Bush's war, maybe then he will begin to listen to them. Politicians like Russ Feingold and Jack Murtha understand this. When the Bush administration asks for another $100 billion for Iraq, Murtha says, quote, they'll have to justify every cent they want, end quote. And unlike other pieces of legislation, Bush needs this supplemental spending bill to pass. If he wants to veto the bill, Murtha says of Bush, he won't have any money. Mr. President, can you hear me now? I'm Ari Berman from The Nation magazine for Air America. For more, go to...
Win fast, win often. The Cash Fever jackpot starts at $20,000 and guaranteed to hit by $30,000. Only at Cash Creek Casino Resort. And now you can check the growing jackpot anytime online at cashcreek.com.
Overnight. This is the CBS World News Roundup, late edition. I'm Bill Whitney.
The windshield wipers don't do much good against a thick layer of ice, a coating that's crippled communities from the southern plains to New England. CBS News correspondent Kelly Cobier is in Muskogee, Oklahoma.
Trees are just snapped in two. They are covered, every last branch and limb, in an inch of ice, encased in that ice, and they are just being weighed down by it. The power companies can barely get around the roads, let alone fix the power lines, and that's not necessarily because there's ice on the roads. It's because there are massive branches covered in ice blocking the roads.
The storm systems moved east, leaving hundreds of thousands of homes and businesses without power in the bitter cold. At least three dozen deaths are blamed on the weather. CBS News meteorologist Brian Norcross.
We can blame it on El Nino. When we have a winter like this, you get these jet streams coming out of the Pacific with warm, moist air up over the typical cold air in the winter. And where they mix together, you have the recipe for freezing rain and sleet. And that's what we saw in Oklahoma. It just happened to come together right there.
Now this.
Have you heard the one about the guy who's looking for a good used car and actually finds one? No, really. That's because he got a Honda certified used car. Each undergoes a 150-point inspection, then backed by a 7-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty from the original in-service date and a 12-month, 12,000-mile limited non-powertrain warranty. And now get low APR financing on all certified used Honda Odyssey and Pilot models. Hey, it may be used, but it's still a Honda.
See dealer for financing and limited warranty details.
I hear you got a new car.
Yeah, I got it for a good price.
What kind is it?
Dunno.
What color?
No idea.
Four-door or two-door?
Haven't a clue. But hey, I got it for a good price.
Buying a car on price alone doesn't make much sense, so why buy car insurance that way? At Progressive Direct, we provide rates from other top companies plus 20 facts and figures so you can compare on more than just price. Visit Progressive.com or call 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. Progressive Direct Insurance Company and its affiliates, Mayfield Village, Ohio. Available in most states and situations.
General George Casey, about to give up his command of U.S. forces in Iraq, confirmed today that several thousand additional troops have already arrived in Baghdad, but Casey said we might not see results of the new strategy until summer or fall.
There are no guarantees of success, and it's not going to happen overnight. But with sustained political support and the concentrated efforts on all sides, I believe that this plan can work.
One sign of progress, 5 of the 10 Iraqi divisions being trained by American forces today passed to Iraqi government control. With Michael Devlin in custody and the two boys he allegedly kidnapped reunited with their families, the question is what power he had that kept one boy with him more than 4 years. CBS News correspondent Bianca Solorzano reports Sean Hornbeck had many opportunities to get away.
Sean told his neighborhood friend his name was Sean Devlin, and he appeared to roam freely.
And sometimes when Mr. Devlin was gone, he'd have the door open and he'd be in there playing Nintendo.
Not only that, he had his cell phone and appears to have been using a computer. Sean's profile, Devil Devlin, appeared on some websites.
Sean Devlin once visited the Sean Hornbeck website. Martin Luther King Jr. would have been 78 today. A parade in Los Angeles celebrated King's nonviolent leadership of the civil rights movement. Michigan State University presented a civil rights exhibit. President Bush made an unannounced visit to Washington's Cardozo High School, not far from the White House, where he pitched in to do some painting.
I encourage people all around the country to seize any opportunity they can to help somebody in need. And by helping somebody in need, you're honoring the legacy of Martin Luther King.
People in Atlanta marked the day by visiting King's tomb, viewing a newly opened collection of his papers, and with a parade. Reporter Pete Combs was there.
Atlanta Mayor Shirley Franklin says she misses the driving force behind today's parade, Martin Luther King's widow, Coretta.
Mrs. King's spirit is in the place. She's all around us, and Dr. King's spirit is with us as well.
There's more than one message at today's parade: civil rights, tolerance, and a strong outpouring of anti-war sentiment here on the streets of downtown Atlanta.
This is no way to teach nonviolence. We're teaching a generation that violence is the solution, and it is not.
Pete Combs, CBS News, at the King Parade in Atlanta.
You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
So you're a consultant.
The fact that somebody like Rush Limbaugh, who has made a career preaching that anybody who does drugs has got to go right to jail, do not pass go, no questions asked, right to jail, gets caught doing 30 OxyContin a day. 30 OxyContin? Do you have any idea how high that is? I don't, and I've been pretty high. But, wow. This guy is putting up Elvis numbers, ladies and gentlemen. But how does he get away with it? They say, well, he's on medication. Oh, see, that's not drugs. You know what, pal? We all got our medication, don't we? They can have an ad on TV that said, ask your doctor if Jack Daniels is right for you. And it would not be out of place thematically.
Win fast, win often. The Cash Fever jackpot starts at $20,000 and guaranteed to hit by $30,000. Only at Cash Creek Casino Resort. And now you can check the growing jackpot anytime online at cashcreek.com.
And to press us in many ways.
That was Bob Gates speaking in Europe today. The Guardian newspaper also reports today that Bush's escalation of the war in Iraq, his decision to send more American troops into Iraq, may also be seen as part of Bush's agenda to convince Iran that we're still scary, that we're not too overstretched in Iraq, and that we mean some sort of unspoken, vague business. Since Saddam Hussein was hanged at the end of December, I've been waiting for news on the fate of the other two men who were sentenced to hang alongside him, although they did not, his half-brother and the chief judge of Saddam's Revolutionary Court. Well, those two finally were hanged today, just at about dawn, and they were apparently hanged on the same gallows where they killed Saddam. This time, they did not let the cell phone video of the hanging leak onto YouTube, but they did show an official video of the hanging to reporters. Here's how it went, according to Lauren Freyer from the Associated Press.
The video shows the trap doors opening, then Awad Hamid al-Bandar's body dangling from a rope. Ibrahim's body lies headless below, his severed head a few yards away. The government says the gallows were built to international standards, but that the decapitation was an act of God.
So you got that? You got that moral divining rod direction there? The hanging, perfectly normal. The accidental ripping off of the man's head, that was God. See, hanging by breaking the neck and asphyxiating with a rope, that's man's work. Accidental severing of the prisoner's head, that's God. You see these very clear moral distinctions that we make as humans, as civilized people? You got it? Good. If there has ever been any doubt that the quote-unquote military tribunals that the Pentagon is going to subject people to at Guantanamo, if there's ever been any doubt that those tribunals aren't exactly up to par for American justice standards, consider this. The guy in charge of detainees for the Pentagon thinks that Guantanamo prisoners should not have lawyers for those tribunals. the senior Pentagon official in charge of military detainees, the Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Detainee Affairs. He said in an interview on Thursday that law firms who let their lawyers represent Guantanamo prisoners pro bono, without, you know, which means without being paid, those law firms ought to be boycotted by U.S. corporations. His name is Charles Stimson, and he calls it shocking that American lawyers might be willing to serve as defense counsel for Guantanamo prisoners. Shocking! And he rattled off the names of about 10 law firms he thinks ought to be boycotted.
Actually, you know, I think the news story that you're really going to start seeing in the next couple weeks is this. As a result of a FOIA request through a major news organization, somebody asked, who are the lawyers around this country representing detainees down there? And you know what? It's shocking. The major law firms in this country, Pillsbury, Winthrop, Jenner and Block, Wilmer Cutler, Pickering, Covington and Burling here in D.C., Sublin, Asbill, Brennan, Paul Weiss, Rifkin, Mayor Brown, Weil, Goschel, Pepper, Hamilton, Venable, Alston and Byrd, Perkins Coie, Hunt and Williams, Fulbright, Jaworski, all the rest of them are out there representing detainees. And I think, quite honestly, when corporate CEOs see that those firms are representing the very terrorists who hit their bottom line back in 2001, those CEOs are going to make those law firms choose between representing terrorists or representing reputable firms.
Remember when the terrorists did that back in September 2001 when they hit corporations' bottom line? Yeah, wasn't that the really awful part about what happened on 9/11? Yeah, also, super shocking that American lawyers might want to actually participate in an American judicial process. If there's one thing that U.S. corporations ought to stand up against, it's the fundamental American value that you get legal representation when you're accused by the government. Corporations ought to be against that. Interestingly, you know, the Scooter Libby trial starts tomorrow. The firm that is representing old Scooter Libby is one of those law firms that the guy just rattled off in that little statement. One of the law firms that apparently the top Pentagon guy in charge of prisoners, in charge of detainees, one of the law firms that he thinks ought to be boycotted for having sent pro bono lawyers to Guantanamo. The Pentagon has since disavowed the comments by the Pentagon detainee guy, but there's no threat so far that he might lose his job or anything. You ready for your toxic, scary stuff news of the day? Of course you are. First one comes from Richmond, California. Here's local reporting from the local CBS affiliate in San Francisco. Anna Duckworth is the reporter here.
From what we know from the spokesperson here at the refinery, it started a little bit after 5:30 this morning. A resident called into our newsroom and said that he heard a pop and then saw the flames shooting up. We are told as high as 50 feet at one point.
The fire burned for about 2 hours. Bloomberg News reports that it spewed soot and unburned petroleum over Richmond, California homes and businesses for those 2 hours. Residents of Richmond were ordered to stay indoors until about 9 a.m. this morning. Toll collectors were recalled from the Richmond Bridge. You know, this is Chevron's third biggest refinery in the United States. This facility is more than 100 years old, and it's in a very densely populated area of the San Francisco Bay Area. You know, that said, of course, a little company like Chevron can't afford to make many safety or environmental upgrades. You know, I mean, there's just no profits to be made in the oil industry anymore. Your other toxic spill of the day was in Irvine, Kentucky at about 11:30 this morning. A crash of two trains which caused a fire and released chemicals resulting in a local evacuation. And again, local residents being told to stay inside their homes for fear of toxic contamination. Four runaway rail cars struck two parked locomotives. Apparently in eastern Kentucky, the chemical released was butyl acetate, about 30,000 gallons of it. The fire wasn't put out until about 3 o'clock this afternoon. Don't worry, though. For your Homeland Security, the president is on vacation. Again, before Hurricane Katrina, you may recall the president, there was some news starting to emerge before Hurricane Katrina about how President Bush had up until that point spent about 1 in 5 days of his presidency on vacation. The image that really stuck with people was him clearing brush at his fake ranch in Crawford. He was in Crawford, after all, and refusing to leave for days after Hurricane Katrina nearly wiped southern Mississippi and New Orleans off the map. So they don't let him go to Crawford for as long as he used to go for anymore. They don't let him spend as much high-profile time in Crawford. But CBS's White House correspondent Mark Noller has done the math and figured out that the president doesn't actually seem to be taking less vacation now. He's just spending more of it at places that sound more presidential than Crawford. For example, Camp David Going to Camp David sounds like you're doing work, like maybe on peace accords or something. But really, a lot of the time, it's just vacation time. Mark Noller did the math and found out that as of this weekend, President Bush just spent his 365th day at Camp David. A full year of time at Camp David for the commander-in-chief. Much of it riding bikes. Those are my top stories this hour. But for sports and the newest Hawaiian teenage golf sensation, here's Kent Jones.
Thanks, Rachel. In the NFL, Chicago, New England, Indianapolis, and New Orleans are still standing after this weekend's playoff rumble. Seattle, San Diego, Baltimore, and Philadelphia, tip your waitresses, drive safely. Oh, and San Diego, the Patriots want to thank you for all the lovely gifts. So generous. In the NBA, Dallas Lomac, Toronto 97-96, and Denver, Naropa, Portland 109-93. In soccer, David Beckham, inhale, sigh, is looking to arrange an early release from his contract with Real Madrid in order to join up with the Los Angeles Galaxy before the end of the Spanish season. Major League Soccer officials say the MLS season starts in April. Officials say the sooner he wraps things up in Spain, the sooner he can get out there in L.A. And by out there, I mean to clubs, premieres, and auditions. And finally, though the winner of this weekend's Sony Open in Hawaii was Paul Goidos, the spotlight was completely stolen by a 16-year-old Hawaiian named Tad Fujikawa, who finished 20th overall after becoming the youngest player in 50 years to make the cut on the PGA Tour. The pros were still on the field concentrating when hundreds of fans mobbed the 5'1" Moanalua High School sophomore, screaming, cheering, and begging him for an autograph. Quote, it's a good feeling when you have this many people backing you and rooting for you. Some worried that the 16-year-old might be too young to handle sudden success. Witnesses spotted him Sunday night with four girls at a local club screaming at the doorman, do you know who I am? I'm Tad Fujikawa! You all have your job! Rachel? Probably not. Nice
Maybe
young
not.
Man.
Yeah. I'm sure
nice
he's lovely.
Man.
Mild-mannered.
Congratulations.
How old is he?
16.
Wow.
Youngster.
Very impressive.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, and had 266s in a row out on the golf course, so woof.
Maybe he skipped some holes.
I don't know. The other guys probably wished he had. So
Susan and I drove down from Massachusetts to New York yesterday instead of this morning because we had a little ice situation up in New England. But we got in the car at the time that the Patriots were kicking off.
Right.
And we parked as the Chargers were missing that 54-yard field goal.
Yeah.
It was the exact time that we drove. We were riveted the whole time.
The
fact that the Patriots got a 50-yard field goal and the Bears get a 49-yard field goal, but then the Chargers lose it on a 54-yard goal. Apparently that 16 feet is the difference between what's doable, or that 12 feet is the difference between what's doable and what's not.
The playoffs are brutal. And last weekend, Dallas fumbled a kick. A field goal kick that would have won them the game.
Oh, yeah, they messed up the setting up of it.
The quarterback, Romo, missed the setup.
Yeah.
So, depend on nothing in the kicking game.
Very impressive. So now we're down to the Patriots, the Bears, the Saints, and the Colts?
And the Colts, yeah. Yeah, the Colts managed to beat Baltimore in a big upset.
It's going to be very hard to root against the New Orleans Saints, no matter who they're playing
against.
That
is very true. And they played well. You may not have to root against them.
Yeah, so, yeah. All right. 19 minutes past the hour. It's the Rachel Maddow Show here on Air America Radio. Ask Dr. Maddow coming up next, plus today's buried lead story. It's all coming up.
There's no need to fear. Underdog is here.
Underdog. The Rachel Underdog. Maddow Show on Air America Radio.
It's the Morning Retort with... The Morning Retort with Scott and Sam.
To understand it.
Miss Romney.
What drives people?
Massachusetts governor. If he can't protect his own citizens from tunnels, how will he protect you from terrorists? Done. Campaign is dead. See how easy it was?
It was that easy.
See, that's the problem on the left. You're the problem right there. You think you get all the answers to all the little questions that does not drive a lot of people outside of both coasts, outside of California and New York. Northeast. I mean, this is not the world. This is not the center of the universe, Mr. Sims.
If Romney gets the nomination, the tunnels win. Think about it. Taurus, Terra, Earth, tunnels. Do the math, Scott!
It's very erotic. I'm being turned on by all this talk.
Scott and Sims, mornings 5:30 to 9 on AM 1320, Sacramento's Left Channel.
At Cache Creek Casino Resort, win fast, win often with Cash Fever Jackpot. Jackpots start at $20,000 and are guaranteed to hit by $30,000. Every time a Cash Fever Jackpot hits, a Cash Club player wins just for playing with their card. Plus, you can check the Cash Fever Jackpot total and your Cash Club points online now at CashCreek.com. So join Cash Club today and get the fever. Cache Creek Casino Resort.
No more cell phones in movie theaters. Please, you're not a cardiologist on call. You're a putz whose babysitter wants to know where the ketchup is. And then you tell her in the middle of the movie. Sometimes it's so loud in the theater I can barely hear what the black people are yelling at the screen. There is a simple solution. Put your cell phone on vibrate. And then up your... All right, new rule. No more celebrating gastric bypass. Carney Wilson, Al Roker, and now Star Jones are all being heralded by the media for stapling their stomachs shut. They shouldn't be. They're not making a brave choice to change. They're giving money to doctors to reroute their ability to turn food into crap.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320.
Work environment here that one might feel that one has to go through, well, Kent Jones in order to ask a question like this. No, it's worth talking about. Tim actually has the day off today,
yes,
so perhaps
yes, he
he's listening at home to get this answer. Martin Luther King, born on January 15th, 1929. You may notice that today's date is also January 15th. Martin Luther King was killed on April 4th, 1968. And 4 days after Martin Luther King was killed in 1968, just 4 days later, Congressman John Conyers introduced a bill in Congress to make King's birthday a national holiday. This was in 1968. After stalling in Congress, public pressure grew. More than 6 million people ended up signing a petition that was sent to Congress. Unions actually did most of the promotion for the Martin Luther King holiday throughout the 1970s. Ronald Reagan was very much opposed to MLK's birthday being a holiday. In the Senate, the resistance in the Senate was actually led by Jesse freaking Helms. led the opposition to King's birthday being a holiday. Reagan relented in his opposition only after Congress passed the King Day bill with an overwhelming veto-proof majority. So even if he had vetoed it, it still would have become law. The vote was 338-90 in the House of Representatives and 78-22 in the Senate. So they could have overturned his veto if he had dared to veto it. But the bill passed in 1983. The White House Rose Garden on November 2nd, 1983, Reagan signed the bill that created the federal holiday. It was observed for the first time in 1986, and it was not until the year 2000 that for the very first time it was officially observed in all 50 U.S. states. Still to this day, the Utah State Legislature makes it a working day. They actually start their legislative session on Martin Luther King Day every year. Just so people can keep that in mind. Also, there are no black members of the Utah State Legislature.
Terrific.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Tim.
Yeah.
You're not getting a signed photo of me. Forget it.
Oh, come on.
Forget it. You're out. Thank you, Doctor. Remember, if you have a question for Dr. Maddow, call us 212-871-8173 or send us an email at maddowonline.com for Ask Dr. Maddow.
Thank you very much, Kent. Thank you very much, Tim. Today's Burying the Lead story.
Uh-huh.
Remember last week I was talking about those U.S. attorneys getting fired all over the country?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, they're being asked to leave because there's this little noticed provision in the Patriot Act that says if there's a vacancy as a U.S. attorney, then they can just fill that job with somebody without having to put them through Senate confirmation.
Right.
We finally now know why they're doing that.
Uh-oh.
One of the people who they made leave was the U.S. attorney in Little Rock. They have replaced him with a guy named Timothy Griffin, whose resume includes working for Karl Rove and heading up opposition research for the Republican National Committee.
Terrific.
A guy like that would never make it through Senate confirmation process, but if they can conveniently nudge out the other guy, they can sneak him in there without anybody knowing.
That unfamiliar sound is...
Win fast, win often. The Cash Fever jackpot starts at $20,000 and guaranteed to hit by $30,000. Only at Cash Creek Casino Resort. And now you can check the growing jackpot anytime online at cashcreek.com.
America Radio.
This can happen to America, the richest nation in the world. There's nothing wrong with that. This is America's opportunity to help bridge the gulf between the haves and the have-nots. And the question is whether America will do it. There's nothing new about poverty. What is new is that we now have the techniques and the resources to get rid of poverty. And the real question is whether we have the will.
That's Martin Luther King speaking at the National Cathedral in Washington, D.C. on March 31st, 1968. That's 5 days before he was assassinated in Memphis. We'll be talking with Algernon Austin shortly about economic justice and why you're not hearing much about the connection between racial justice and economic justice from the Democrats these days. That's coming up in just a moment. Before we get to my interview with Algernon, though, I have some important beauty queen news to give you. Another Miss USA candidate is giving up her crown. Ashley Harder, the current Miss New Jersey USA, has resigned her post, giving up her tiara because she is pregnant. She says she voluntarily stepped down because it is against pageant rules to compete while pregnant. And as Miss New Jersey, she would have the right to compete for Miss USA. She's the second Miss USA candidate to pass on the crown to somebody else recently. Miss Nevada USA, Katie Rees, was recently stripped of her tiara after racy photos of her appeared on the Internet. After a tearful public apology also, the current Miss USA, Tara Conner, was allowed to keep her tiara this year by a blowhardy Donald Trump. After Tara Conner was caught drinking in New York bars while she was underage and was photographed making out with Miss Teen USA. I don't know why that isn't more of the headlines, that whole Miss Teen USA, Miss USA thing. I kind of want to know how the relationship's working out, personally. Delaware Senator Joseph Biden said today that he would vote to keep the Confederate flag off of South Carolina State House grounds. 6 years ago, the Confederate flag was taken down from the South Carolina Capitol Dome, but it does still fly in front of the State House in South Carolina. It's an issue that has prompted the NAACP to boycott South Carolina. On the other hand, California Congressman Duncan Hunter has announced that he will formally launch his presidential campaign at the end of the month from South Carolina, specifically from Spartanburg. He said, quote, "The location represents my campaign." On a third hand about South Carolina, producer Jackie Bell notes today that South Carolina is very pretty, just so you know. Finally, the Associated Press is reporting that U.S. troops may have taken part in combat operations against suspected al-Qaeda-linked guerrillas in the Philippines in possible violation of the Philippines Constitution. This is one for your secret undeclared wars file. Research by an activist group called Focus on the Global South made it into the Associated Press today. The U.S. Embassy has denied the allegation, saying that U.S. troops in the Philippines are just visiting. They're just advising their Filipino counterparts. They're not actually engaging in any sort of combat. It's important that they say that because the Constitution of the Philippines explicitly bans American troops from joining Filipino troops on combat patrols or operations. I don't expect that we'll hear another thing about that unless some major scandal emerges. Those are some of the stories we're keeping an eye on today. So the clock is stopped right now on the Democrats' 100 hours agenda. They are blowing through that agenda like a staph infection blows through a wrestling team, and that's the best metaphor you'll hear all day. The Democrats' 100 hours agenda, they're going through it so fast, and there's so much else going on that I think most of the country isn't even noticing what big deal stuff they're doing. One of the things that I have noticed, though, is that Democrats are not talking about their big economic populist agenda in terms of how it would benefit African Americans and how it would reduce racial inequality in this country. Politically, I think they ought to be articulating that. Joining us to discuss why they might not be is Algernon Austin. Algernon Austin is the director of the Thora Institute. He's author of Getting It Wrong: How Black Intellectuals Are Failing Black America. Algernon Austin, welcome back to the show.
Oh, my pleasure to be here.
Why do you think that the Democrats aren't crowing about how what they're doing right now in Congress is going to be good for Black America?
Well, first thing I think that it's important to say is that you know, raising the minimum wage and cutting the interest on student loans will benefit blacks significantly, as well as the other policies. I mean, lower prescription drug prices also. So that needs to be said. On the other hand,
and do you think that they benefit black America specifically because black Americans are overrepresented among the poor and lower middle class, and these are policies that will help people who are in those economic strata?
That is true. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes. Yes. But you know, with race in American politics, you have to, unfortunately, you have to be very careful. When a policy is popularly perceived correctly or incorrectly as being a quote-unquote black policy, it automatically loses support. So, for example, there are polls with affirmative action, and affirmative action has, in fact, at least in employment, disproportionately helped white women. But most people still perceive it as a black policy. And when there are polls that ask people, do you support affirmative action policies for women? Do you support affirmative action policies for blacks? You get more support when it's just said about for women than for blacks.
Hmm.
So we're in, given the sort of realities of race in American society and American politics, putting the sort of the racial, identifying a policy with blacks too strongly will mean that it will lose support.
Do you think that...
It'll be seen as a quote-unquote special interest, and usually an unjustified special interest.
That label, that unjustified special interest, the lack of support for policies that are seen as benefiting African Americans, is that because of overt racial campaigning on the part of conservatives who are opposed to policies like this, or do you think that actually comes in part from the left and from Democrats and the way they think about these types of policies?
Well, I think a lot of things are going on there. I mean, in when you're thinking as a politician and thinking about winning, you're interested in, I mean, you'll hear Democrats and others talk about sort of appealing to the center. And that, for me, you know, I immediately think of Reagan, the Reagan administration, and the loss of the Reagan Democrats. And one way that one strategy that Reagan used was the welfare queen stereotype.
Hmm.
So a lot of the politics around welfare is a result of, you know, the race and class and welfare and the effective use of Ronald Reagan in the campaign to peel off, you know, the what was called the Reagan Democrats, in part due to the attack on welfare and using the welfare queen stereotype. And then subsequently we also had the Willie Horton, you know, so again,
yeah,
criminal justice, race, criminal justice, et cetera. So conservatives are very strategic in sort of very subtly playing the what you can call the race card, the sort of conservative race card.
You would expect, though, that there would be a countervailing force on the left that progressives at least would embrace, and you'd hear a lot more talk about, even from, you know, my colleagues in the progressive media, which is that, hey, even if you look at this purely in terms of strategy and not just in terms of the good of the nation and getting rid of racial inequality to the best that we can, even if you look at this in pure partisan strategic terms, more than 10% of the electorate is African American, and those are votes that need to be kept. 100% of the black vote should be the Democrats' goal, and they should be at least touting these achievements and touting the racial implications of these achievements, these economic populist kind of bills, if only to go after and secure the black vote in the face of overt Republican attempts to try to win over black voters.
Right, right. Yeah, it's important, and it's a difficult dance for the Democrats, because if their policy becomes seen as too much as a black, quote unquote, black party,
yeah,
then they lose, you know, Reagan Democrats. But if they continue doing what they're doing, they risk losing portions of the black vote. And the Republicans, like you've mentioned, have been very consciously, you know, running conservative black candidates in key positions. And what some people don't realize, you know, I know some people say, well, there's no way Republicans are going to get, you know, 80% of the black vote. But the math is, you don't need 80%. You need 10% in some areas. So if you can just shave off enough black voters, you win, because, as you know, our elections have been extremely close.
That said, the Republicans have really been shooting themselves in the foot. But, I mean, they do things like, you know, they recruit candidates like Michael Steele and Ken Blackwell and other conservative black candidates, and they try to maintain themselves. You know, Ken Mellman goes out and apologizes for past racism in the Republican Party. And then against Harold Ford, they run this unbelievably racist ad that gets national play. They run a candidate like George Allen, who just makes these unbelievably racist statements. They keep people around, and they keep using political tactics that are so old school, that are so not about the type of image they've tried to maintain for attracting black voters, that they keep just shooting themselves in the foot. I mean, they must think that black voters are stupid to not see those things going on at the same time.
Right. I mean, with a big party, you always... You know, no party has complete control, although Republicans have had better control over their members than the Democrats. So, yeah, so there are, you know, there is some diversity. There is diversity in the Republican ranks, and you have, you know, some people who really are pretty racially insensitive.
There's a whole generation of kids in Virginia wearing T-shirts that say, "Who you callin' macaca?" I mean, like, you can't make that go away with one apologetic speech from Ken Mellman. You know, it just
that stuff
never dies.
Yeah.
Algernon, do you think that there's any hope for the Democrats more overtly embracing the African American community and the connection between economic populism, policies that literally economically favor the lower middle class and the lower class, and making that an overt case for votes to the black community? Or do you think they're going to stay shy of that part of it?
I suspect they'll stay shy, because the other thing is that there are many black politicians in the Democratic Party who can be more explicit about that, you know, sort of on the local level. And also, you know, black voters, I think many black voters also understand the implications of these policies. You know, they, you know, like, in terms of minimum wage, they know that it's going to benefit lots of poor blacks. And, you know, they and everyone else know that, you know, the cost of college is rising and it's very difficult to pay for. So people will understand the implications of the bill.
Even if the Democrats are too big a wusses to articulate it.
Right, yes.
Algernon, it's always a real pleasure to talk to you. Thanks for joining us. Looking forward to having you back soon.
Okay, my pleasure.
Thank you. Algernon Austin is the author of Getting It Wrong, How Black Intellectuals Are Failing Black America. He's also the director of the Thora Institute. It's 47 minutes past the hour. This is The Rachel Maddow Show here on Air America Radio. Kent Jones joins me next. Plus, that important story about riding the subway without your pants on.
Rachel Maddow Show loves to answer your questions. Call us at 212-871-8173. Air America Radio.
It's the Randy Rhodes Show.
It's not something that you just dump something on. It's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes. Massive tubes. It really is the internet consumer bill of rights. Because you got tangled up with all of these things that are going on the internet commercially. The world has turned against this. If your own personal internet, that is you and me. You need it. Tubes. The internet is not something that you just dump something on. It's not a big truck.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320.
It's a series of tubes.
New rule. Prince Harry is going to hurt someone. Look at this kid. He's a thundering ball of rage. His mom's dead. His father dates rotted tree bark. His brother gets to be king, and he's destined to spend the rest of his life being photographed doing nothing. Arrest him before he kills a woman. New rule. Country music stars can't be authors. Charlie Daniels' new book, Ain't No Rag, Freedom, Family, and the Flag, it's a collection of musings by noted white trash icon Charlie Daniels on subjects ranging from American flags to American flag bumper stickers to what to do to a hippie if you catch him trying to burn your flag. Before this book, I was ambivalent on the issue of flag burning. Now I find myself reconsidering the question of book burning.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320.
Metro PCS presents more scenes from other wireless stores.
How's 1,000 free minutes sound?
Wow, are they anytime minutes?
Well, they're anytime minutes.
That's what I said.
You said anytime minutes.
So did you.
I said anytime minutes.
I just thought you said anytime with like a little accent.
Well, that's what I wanted you to think.
Okay, so what are anytime minutes?
Well, they're like anytime minutes, only the window of time where you can actually use them is very small. It's any, if you will.
How small?
Sundays from 4:11 a.m. to 4:12 a.m.
Wow, that's eeny weeny.
I love rhymes.
Stop counting minutes. Switch to Metro PCS and pay by the month, not by the minute. For $40 a month, you get all the local and long-distance calls you can make anytime. And there's no contract. Call 888-8-METRO-8 for a store near you or buy online at metropcs.com. Metro PCS.
Hello. Hello. Hello.
Permission to speak freely. Long distance in the continental U.S. Taxes and fees not included.
Welcome back to the Rachel Maddow Show. It's
52 minutes
past the hour. Now, it's Kent Jones Now, with Kent Jones Now.
Hello, Dateline Petersburg, Kentucky. Workers are putting the finishing touches on a Bible-based museum here in northern Kentucky that shows how the earth, animals, dinosaurs, and humans were created in a six-day period about 6,000 years ago. Not to be argumentative, but I've told jokes older than that. Scientists actually did carbon dating on one of my jokes, 8,500 years old, encased in amber. Still, rather than evolving over millions of years, as those crazy secular humanists and their facts would have you believe, here, in the state-of-the-art lobby, dinosaurs and animatronic humans coexist in a biblical paradise. Tellingly, though, the dinosaurs are sighing and rolling their eyes. The $27 million project, which also includes a planetarium, a special effects theater, nature trails, and a small lake, is privately funded by people who believe the Bible's book of Genesis is literally true. Despite this, organizers say the museum is family-oriented, and there will be absolutely no begatting allowed on the museum grounds. The museum's teams of designers include the man who designed the Jaws and King Kong attractions at Universal Studios in Florida. Personally, I can't wait for Sodom and Gomorrah, The Ride. This is Kent Jones for The Rachel Maddow Show on Air America Radio. Vigilance.
Oh, that's very dirty.
A little dirty.
Yeah.
Just a little touch of dirty. Got to read your Bible.
There will be no begatting, but there may be some smoting, perhaps.
There could be some smiting happening, but no begatting.
I have a pet story here for you, Kent.
Monkey.
Monkey.
From which we did not evolve.
Exactly.
Anyway.
Kept them as pets, along with velociraptors. And stem cell researchers are evil. All right. It was apparently a holiday on Saturday in New York City that I did not know about.
Yes.
It was no peanuts on the subway day. Yes.
That's a holiday?
Apparently.
Whoa.
More than 200 people participated in the 6th annual No Pants Subway Ride on the 6th line on Saturday.
I have misplaced my pants.
Yes. Participants gathered at the Brooklyn Bridge City Hall station, boarded the 6th train, took off their pants while still wearing underpants, and then exited at different stations. Then they reboarded other uptown trains to shock and amuse their fellow subway riders.
Well, if they really committed, no underpants, you know?
But then that would be illegal. One of the organizers, a 28-year-old guy from Improv Everywhere, says it is not against the law to wear your underwear. My favorite part about the local reporting on this is from the New York Daily News. They quote a 31-year-old Melissa Poles of Manhattan, who says, quote, I'm standing here with no pants on. I'm awesome.
Okay, that could be the gateway to something great.
Seriously, I'm all in favor.
If it's once a year, it's fine.
Do shocking stuff that's still legal, I think. If you don't exercise your rights, you lose them.
Mm-hmm.
Show people you can.
The political as underpants.
Yes.
I guess.
I'm not a subscriber to the Bangor Daily News.
No.
But I have registered online for their online content in anticipation of a feature they're doing this upcoming weekend, which hopes to explain a new statistic unveiled by Maine state government. Maine state government, every year, I think it's the state government that does this and not the paper. I think it's the government. They have tallied. Yeah, it's the state. They tallied the most popular liquor sold in the state.
Uh-huh.
The top 10 bottles of liquor in terms of popularity among Mainers. Number one is Allen's Coffee Brandy. Number two, Allen's Coffee Brandy. Number six, Allen's Coffee Brandy. And number 10, Allen's Coffee Brandy. It appears 4 times in the top 10 because they track bottle sizes separately. But Mainers drink so much Allen's Coffee Brandy that it appears 4 times in the top 10.
I've never heard of this. I feel like a fool.
So do I. I know.
Allen's Coffee Brandy.
It's Monday now. The feature comes out this weekend. That gives me 4 days to start drinking Allen's Coffee Brandy and find out what's so great about it.
Yes, we will do an update on this story, I assure you.
Maybe.
Hello there.
I figure, you know, Rhode Island has coffee-flavored milk.
All right.
You know, maybe this coffee brandies. Anyway, no other brand registers more than once in the top 10, but it is big in Maine.
Terrific.
Finally,
get that.
Declassified papers from the National Archives in Britain uncovered by the BBC shed light on a 1956 visit by the French Prime Minister to Britain. He proposed to Britain that France and Britain merge and become one country. Yeah, apparently they turned him down, but it does make you wonder.
Britain.
France. Maybe. The United Francedom. I don't know. Apparently they said no. Then he said, well, how about if we just became part of the Commonwealth? They said yes, and then nobody knows what happened.
New rule, one dear to my heart. Lap dancing is a First Amendment right.
The L.A. City Council this week banned lap dancing. What is next? Burning books? Lap dancers, or Imagineers, as I like to call them, are artists drawing you into their fantasy world, much like a skilled novelist does. If novelists had perfectly waxed bikini lines. But more importantly, lap dancers are expressing an idea called hope. The hope that someday a skinny young woman with artificial breasts and a navel piercing will want to have sex with you. And without that hope, millions of American men might just as well throw themselves into the sea.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320. Listening to AM 1320 KCTC.
Sacramento.
Sacramento's left channel. Because you deserve the truth.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. It's worse than a blizzard. An ice storm can wreak havoc for days or even weeks, cutting power as the weight of ice cracks tree limbs and snaps power lines. Trouble extends from the southern plains to New England. Martin Murray is a spokesman for Public Service of New Hampshire.
We had about 23,000 customers without power. It's really a result of icy buildup on branches, and we've had a number of power outages due also to poles coming in contact with cars that have spun out on the street.
Across the country, hundreds of thousands of homes and businesses are dark. CBS News correspondent Kelly Cobiella is in hard-hit Muskogee, Oklahoma.
Some people are staying in their homes. Some people have managed to get a generator, although that's about the hottest item in this region right now. Some people are going into the shelters and trying to stay warm there. The shelter here in Muskogee actually lost power for a little while last night. So even at the shelter, it was pretty cold until they could get those generators up and running.
In the southwest, crops have suffered severe freeze damage. CBS News correspondent Sandra Hughes is in Ventura, California.
I was out with some growers today, and you can see the damage to the avocados. And some of the growers we talked to said they've lost between 50% to 100% of their avocado groves. And some, actually one of the growers I talked to said he had so much extensive damage to the tree, the avocado tree, that it'll be 2 years before he gets another crop growing.
California citrus growers estimate they've lost about three-quarters of their billion-dollar crop. General George Casey, the outgoing commander in Iraq, says the new strategy will be Iraqi-led, but only to a point.
American forces will remain under American command. Period. No issues.
Casey said the plan will yield results over months, not overnight. Defense Secretary Gates, visiting NATO headquarters in Brussels, said there might be opportunities for engagement with Iranian officials when they're prepared to play a constructive role in Iraq and in Lebanon.
The Iranians clearly believe that we're tied down in Iraq, that they have the initiative, that they're in a position to press us in many ways.
Iran said today that it's going ahead with plans to install 3,000 centrifuges to enrich uranium for large-scale production of nuclear fuel. Across the country, Martin Luther King Jr. was remembered today in a variety of ways.
We come on this special occasion commemorating the life of a great American, a great humanitarian, and one who provided for this nation and for the world.
An observance in Philadelphia. There were prayers and parades, and in Washington, President Bush visited a high school near the White House to help with a King Day cleanup project. The stock market was closed on this Martin Luther King Day. This is CBS News.
Is your office in disarray? Can't find what you need? Well, Office Depot has great deals on file folders, binders, filing cabinets, shredders, and storage containers. Plus, we have over 800 calendars and planners to keep you up to date. So hurry in. Let Office Depot lend you a hand getting organized. Office Depot, taking care of business.
Whoa, Office Depot!
This is Charles Osgood of the Osgood File. Emerging research suggests that eating foods naturally rich in antioxidants may help protect your memory. I think that's big news. Even more surprising is where to find those protective antioxidants. Did you know Welch's 100% grape juice has powerful antioxidants, just like red wine? In fact, one independent study just ranked Welch's 100% grape juice the number one beverage for antioxidant capacity per serving among 1,000 foods tested. So if you want to help protect your memory, remember to drink delicious Welch's 100% grape juice every day. This is Charles Osgood. I'll see you on the Osgood File.
It's Hollywood's warm-up for the Oscars. The Golden Globes award show is just getting underway in Beverly Hills. Let's go live to CBS News correspondent Steve Futterman.
Bill, this is the night Hollywood awards season really begins in earnest. The Golden Globes often set the stage for the rest of the major awards, including the Oscars. We already have one winner so far. Jennifer Hudson wins Best Supporting Actress for her role in Dreamgirls. Now, many believe the favorite tonight is the Martin Scorsese mob drama The Departed. It's up for the top award, Best Dramatic Film. Its biggest competition is probably Babel. In the Best Musical or Comedy Film category, the nominees include Borat and Dreamgirls. Live at the Golden Globes in Beverly Hills, Steve Futterman, CBS News.
The winners are decided by just 85 people, members of the Hollywood Foreign Press Association. For the Academy Awards, there are 5,800 people in the film industry who were eligible to vote, and many of them do. The Oscar ceremony is coming up on February 25th. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
Have you heard? Sunny day with tonight's AccuTerra forecast.
And folks, wasn't it just a perfect day for a terror alert? Bone chilling in the morning, clear and present danger in the afternoon, tapering off into cold sweats at night. Tomorrow, AccuTerra is predicting 100% chance of a really big terror alert to take our mind off bad economic news. An Al-Qaeda cell coming down from Canada into here, the Great Lakes regions, the folks in the Detroit and Saginaw. You might want to put on that extra layer of Kevlar. Our exclusive AccuTerra radar is picking up a lot of chatter out here in the Denver area. So stay away from chemical plants, nuclear facilities, and, of course, the French fries at Arby's. Here in the West, some light showers of ammonium nitrate, a little sarin gas are possible in the Los Angeles area, but don't expect loss of life. The Santa Anas are going to push all that nasty gunk out. Here's your 5-day. Yellow, bluish yellow, yellow again, yellow gradually becoming orange, and orange back into yellow. And we've got an orangish red weekend on tap, so be sure to have plenty of bottled water and canned goods on hand. And that's terror. All right, make it a great day.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320.
Politically Direct with David Bender. David's guests tonight are Reverend Jesse Jackson and Senator Sheila Kuehl of California.
I would live like a free man.
Hello and welcome to the program. I'm David Bender, and the rumors of my demise have in fact been greatly exaggerated, happy to say. Actually, I've had a wonderful vacation these past several weeks, the first real break I've taken since we started doing Politically Direct almost 2 years ago now. I want to give special thanks to my friend, the monster of Midtown, the Goliath of Gotham, the incomparable Mark Green, who did such a great job in this chair over the last 2 weeks. Now that you've all had a chance to hear the Mark Green I've known for more than 20 years, I know you'll agree with me that those of us who care deeply about a progressive future for our country would be very lucky if Mark continues to have a regular forum on the public airwaves. And for those of you who want to help Mark in his important effort to enact democracy funding for our political campaigns, a subject very close to my heart that you've heard me talk about regularly on this program. If you want to help Mark in this essential effort to take back our democracy, log on to newdemocracyproject.org and find out how you can help. Okay, it's time to get back in the saddle. I've missed being with you these past weeks, and it's good to be back. Today, on the anniversary of the birth of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., it's a great honor for me to welcome to the program, for the first time, a man who for almost 4 decades has been the living embodiment of Dr. King's legacy, a 2-time Democratic presidential candidate and the founder and president of the Rainbow Push Coalition. Reverend Jesse L. Jackson, welcome to Politically Direct.
Good to be with you, and happy birthday, Martin Luther King.
Happy birthday, Martin Luther King. Well, you know, it's amazing. You and I share in common also my great mentor in life was a man named Allard Lowenstein. And you may not know this, but Al Lowenstein's birthday was a day away from Dr. King's. He would also be 78 within this next day.
Well, it's interesting that on this day, I was with Dr. King and Al Lowenstein this day, January 15th, 1968.
Oh, my.
As a matter of fact, the way Dr. King spent his last birthday was around 8 o'clock that morning. He had breakfast with his family. Around 10, he came to the church with blue jeans on and a windbreaker jacket, sports shirt. And the group of allies there had some Appalachian whites, had some blacks from the Deep South, Alabama, Mississippi, Georgia, and Lowenstein there from New York with some Jewish allies, had some Native Americans, and a few of Chavez's group out in Southwest Texas and Colorado. And basically, we had never worked together before, but he was organizing us to organize a poor people's campaign to march to Washington.
Right.
To go there to sit in and maybe engage in civil disobedience and go to jail, literally, to force the Congress to come to grips with the need to address the issue of poverty, illiteracy, and disease. His mission was a job and income beneath which no American would fall. Around noontime, Janona Clayton brought in a cake and said, "Doc, you forgot your own birthday. You're so busy." We laughed and ate the cake and drank the punch. And then Al Lornstein began to conduct a workshop that afternoon around 2 o'clock on how to end the war in Vietnam. Hmm. We spent that day literally with Al Lornstein and Dr. King on this day, January 15, 1968.
For those who didn't know, Al Lowenstein, you know, he had worked and helped organize the Freedom Riders in the South, had been an extraordinary figure. But it's amazing to me now when we go back and look at that, and I thank you for telling that story, Reverend Jackson, because that part of Dr. King's life, and I see that you've just recently spoken about it, when he began working on the Poor People's Campaign, and in fact in the months that followed, which led him to Memphis, he was taking on an establishment that was no longer willing to idealize him for the work he was doing.
Southern bigotry was embarrassing to the country. It became a national liability. The North could kind of look down upon the South with a kind of smirk.
Right.
At that time.
Condescension.
And so fighting to end Southern Jim Crow was very violent. It required a lot of courage, but it was kind of simply put, take down those humiliating signs. It was not good for America. And it seems that once we won that battle, a nine-year battle from Montgomery to the 64 Public Accommodation Bill, and then the right to vote, we were moving. He said the next big issue is that there are too many working poor people. Most Americans who are poor and not on welfare, they work every day.
Right.
And they need a job, an income, or health care. And therefore, to do that, you could not have that plan for blacks or for Latinos. It had to be a multiracial, multicultural group where all of us see a common interest, whether you're from Appalachia, from the hills, or from Harlem, or you're from East L.A., or you're from a reservation. We all have in common desire to have a job on income and health care and education. And that was a principle around which he was organizing that campaign on this day.
One might even call it a rainbow that was required.
Well, indeed it was a rainbow, because much of my ideas and ideology comes from working with Dr. King. And after the rainbow, when I began in 84 to run, I looked and saw who all was locked out. And there were more folks locked out than locked in. Native Americans were having a rally, recognized our Indianness. Latinos were having a rally, discussing language and immigration policy. And women were having rallies, National Organization for Women, and blacks were having rallies. I said, well, if we, together we are a rainbow.
Right.
And together we are a new majority. So let's organize together.
Reverend Jackson, I remember that campaign very well. I've been working in presidential campaigns now since 1968, since Robert Kennedy's campaign. And only Robert Kennedy and you, the only two candidates I've ever seen who were able to give the same speeches to white audiences, to black audiences, to Latino audience, who did not have to tailor their remarks or simply chose not to, and were able to get an extraordinary... I remember you going to Wisconsin and getting an amazing response in that 84 campaign from largely white farmers.
Well, white farmers were in jeopardy. They were being put out of business by corporate farmers and had no place to go, and I stood with them, and they responded.
They did.
Across ancient lines of race and culture, they responded, and we built a big coalition in Iowa and in the states. Actually, many of the Democrat, many of the farmers who had gone Republican under Reagan came back to the Democratic Party to vote for our campaign.
That's right. And what's wrong with our politics in the years since? Why has it been only you and Robert Kennedy who have been able to make that kind of reach to across ideology?
I don't know. I think sometimes people know the difference between brass and gold, between what's authentic, should I say. I mean, for example, it's clear to me that Detroit now has the technology to use ethanol rather than gas from the Middle East. But the gas company would not allow the conversion at the pump to go from gasoline to ethanol. Well, to speak to that issue, clearly will make the farmers come alive. But if you're trying to speak to the farmers on the one hand and take money from the energy industry on the other, you speak with a forked tongue.
Yes.
The lack of genuineness. It's just like some people are now it's fascist. I'm against the war in Iraq, but let's fund it to protect the troops. Well, that's, you can't have it both ways. If you're against the war, then stop funding it. You don't help the troops by getting that more of them killed and more of them injured. You help the troops by, A, bringing them home, but also, if you're going to send money, let it go for the troops and not for Halliburton no-bid contracts. You assume that the $100 billion would go to protect the troops. That is not the case.
I'm glad you brought it up, because clearly this is the seminal issue, in much in the same way that in 1968, when Dr. King spoke out against the war, actually at Riverside Church in New York, this was the moment at which so many people came together in the idea of social justice and justice around the world. And you can't have one without the other, really. They have to stay connected. That was a very tough moment for Dr. King. Got a lot of criticism for speaking.
Well, because at that time, we had not really internationalized our politics as we do now. You know, today, you look at CNN, it's just international politics all day, every day. And,
right.
Of course, now CNN does it, Fox does it. So now, for us to be global citizens now is not heavy lifting. When Dr. King spoke against the war in Vietnam, he was breaking a silence that, you know, domestic is for us, and foreign policy is for them. And you can't talk about what they want to talk about. So the fact that he dared to be global in his view really threatened the old status quo.
We're talking with Reverend Jesse Jackson. We need to take a quick break. You're listening to Politically Direct on Air America Radio. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Switch to MetroPCS and pay by the month, not by the minute. $40 a month, all the local and long-distance calls you can make anytime, and no contract. Call 888-8-METRO-8, MetroPCS.
Hello.
Permission to speak freely. Long distance in the continental U.S. Taxes and fees not included.
Just for playing with their card. Plus, you can check the Cash Fever jackpot total and your Cash Club points online now at CashCreek.com. So join Cash Club today and get the fever. Cash Creek Casino Resort.
Tennessee, 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 Tennessee.
Air America Radio presents Politically Direct with David Bender.
And we're back. My guest is Reverend Jesse L. Jackson, Sr., president of the Rainbow Push Coalition, and we're privileged to be speaking with him here on the anniversary of the birth of Reverend Martin Luther King, Jr. Reverend Jackson, in a year that reminds me so much of 1968, this is a time, this election, oddly enough, 40 years later as we go into it, we're again torn apart around a war. Poverty is again an issue that is, in many respects, coming to the front burner. And someone like John Edwards, who's been on this program a number of times, has made it a personal issue to talk about poverty in America and the two Americas. Is the past prologue now? Are we seeing ourselves coming back around cyclically?
In some sense, I admire John Edwards so much because I think he is a man of convictions and he has a strong work ethic. The fact that he opened his campaign in the Katrina zone was taking that territory. It's significant to me that when Nancy Pelosi put up her first 100 hours, Katrina was not in the first 100 hours.
It's interesting, yeah.
Katrina is not only a place in New Orleans. Katrina is a metaphor for abandoned urban America. And Edwards takes out that territory. And he says he's going after the rural, white, urban, black people who are more incumbent than they realize that they do and build of them a mighty progressive coalition. I think it's a smart thing he's doing, but I also think it is morally right.
He just spoke, actually, again this past weekend at Riverside Church.
And, he did.
And called out people on the question of funding this war. Now, is this going to be the line in the sand, if you will, that all of us need to draw? It's not just enough to oppose the war. We have to say now it's time. If you want to be president, you have to say no more.
Put it this way. $500 billion has been spent already. And we're not clear where that money went and how it was spent. Because there was no accountability. It was off-budget money.
Right.
It was another $100 billion. I'm still getting parents who are coming to me trying to send their kids flap jackets to Iraq.
Right. This is being done on a voluntary basis.
So don't assume the $100 billion means more troop support. It could mean more no-bid contracts.
Yeah, it's astounding, and I guess one of the things we will see from Henry Waxman and from Carl Levin is we're going to follow that money and find out where some of that has gone.
Well, after all, it was the corrupt and greedy Iraqi exiles that led us into the thing in the first place that our corrupt and greedy were following, and we chose the corrupt and greedy of Iraqi exiles over UN inspectors, which was a more structured, credible institution than was those offline corrupt Iraqi exiles whose obsession was to go back home and take over the country and give us the impression they'd take us with them. And they failed, and so have we. Will there be a major march January 27th in Washington against the war? That's a continuation of our fight back November the 7th. Now comes the 2008 campaign. We're going to have some choices in this campaign. And not only did Edwards stake out the territory about poverty in Katrina, but Medina Kucinich said and staked out the territory that you can't be for against the war and for the funding. He means to be on that stage making that case, calling somebody's hand. So now some of those who are not running are trying to seek out a way to get a little closer to stop the war, stop the funding. They hear Dennis Kucinich's footprints. I think Dennis and Edwards are doing us a national favor already.
You just had a platform. It was your Wall Street project, which you do annually. You just had that gathering, and it was a remarkable group of people. Hillary Clinton came. Barack Obama came. In fact, it was a very moving event in which Barack Obama talked about the legacy of not only Dr. King, but yours in terms of a torch being passed. Al Sharpton was there saying he may yet run again. What are you going to do in terms of this race in 2008?
You know, right now, Al said to CNN he's not going to run.
He did.
He said that. But, you know, to me, the issue right now is not just who's running. This is a window dressing stage. It's just what is the agenda. Who has a plan and a commitment to reinvest in America, to take on poverty? I mean, Nancy Pelosi in the first 100 hours says we're going to raise minimum wage. Well, that's better than not raising it, but that doesn't address unemployment at all. That doesn't address the unskilled workers at all. We got to go deeper than just raising minimum wage for working people. She says she wants to remove interest payments from student loans. That's a good thing. What about those who can't get in college in the first place? We must be bolder and more daring to address real needs of people who've been abandoned by 6 years of neglect by this administration.
Well, there is a Jesse Jackson who's a member of her caucus, actually. What's it like to be the father of someone who's now in the majority in the House of Representatives?
Well, two things. Give him distance enough to make his own decisions and enjoy the fact that most of them he make, I agree with.
That's a happy coincidence, isn't it?
It is.
Well, you must be as proud as we are to have you on this program today. And I want to say, if I'm correct, your mention of the rally on January 27th, the march on Washington, it's something that I'm hoping that most of our listeners are going to be participating in. Will you be speaking there?
Well, I intend to be present to speak there. I just think that there's been so much hype about who is running. What the agenda has gotten lost in the hype. And I'm listening for something. I'm not just looking. I'm listening. I'm listening for who has a commitment to revive a war on poverty. Or who has a commitment to not be afraid of the word liberal. You know, America's a liberal idea. America's a liberal idea. America's a liberal. Is a liberal idea. The idea of feed the hungry, clothe the naked, set the captive free, equal protection under the law, equal opportunity. These are liberal ideas, in contrast to ideas where you, in fact, deny people freedoms based upon fears.
Well, we will look forward to this process and listening with you, and we would like to have the benefit of what you hear back on this program. Can you join us again in the months to come?
Well, if you invite me, I'd be delighted to come.
Absolutely will.
I think this should be the annual week. The King Week should be the annual week where we increase voter registration. I mean, every high school senior who's with the King movement should be registered to vote this week. This should be the big week of all the college students should register. Big King registration, voter restoration for those who've lost their right to vote. A real fight for new funding for public education and end the war. Let's make this a week of substance, not just empty celebration. A week of real King-like substance, fighting against poverty and against unnecessary wars.
Amen to that. We'll do that every night here on Air America, and we thank you so much for joining us, sir.
Thank you.
Stop Mad Cowboys. America dropped 5% in the last decade, which may explain why this country's finances have gone to
you, sons of Abraham. Breed. We need you. Israel needs you. Kobe Bryant, Robert Blake, and Phil Spector need you. Without Jews, who's going to write all those sitcoms about blacks and Hispanics? New rule. Living in a box for 6 weeks doesn't make you a magician, it makes you homeless.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
Nothing pumps me up more than when fans tell me I love the game.
Number 23!
This is Kevin Martin from the Sacramento Kings. Metro PCS loves the Kings, and I'm a fan of Metro PCS. For just $45 a month, I can talk and text all I want, and there's no contract. If you live, work, and play in Northern California, get permission to speak freely with Metro PCS. Tell them Kevin sent you.
Metro PCS.
Hello.
Permission to speak freely. Long distance coverage in the continental U.S. Taxes and fees not included. Certain restrictions apply. See store for details.
About gas prices. It's good that it costs a lot, and not just because the sales tax will help pay for our twice-a-year governor elections. It's also good if it makes you think of walking the three blocks from your house to Del Taco instead of taking the Land Cruiser. Gasoline costs a lot because we have to find it, bribe, or kill the people who live on top of it. Extract it, refine it, ship it, and pump it. You'll pay $2 a gallon, and you'll like it because you know what the alternative is. Riding on the bus with poor people. New rule. Call things what they are. If your morning coffee contains crushed ice, whipped cream, and caramel, it's a milkshake.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
On Air America Radio.
And welcome back. Well, regular listeners to Politically Direct know that I'm a Californian born and raised. Now, the Golden State has foisted many dubious political figures on the rest of the nation. Richard Nixon and Ronald Reagan certainly come to mind. But we shouldn't forget the outstanding contributions of such luminaries as B1 Bob Dornan and Top Gun inspiration Duke, I'll take that in cash, Cunningham. And in recent years, Arnold Schwarzenegger has certainly thrust himself into the competition for a place in the California political hall of shame. Yet despite all of the best or worst efforts of this stellar group of Republican stalwarts, California has also given us some of the most courageous and articulate progressives in public life. Nancy Pelosi and Barbara Boxer come immediately to mind, of course, but as far as I'm concerned, the leader of the pack is a woman whose campaign to create a single-payer system of universal health care in California will, when it succeeds, literally save millions of lives for generations to come. And it will succeed, precisely because State Senator Sheila James Kuehl is its champion. She joins us today by telephone from Santa Monica. Sheila, welcome back to Politically Direct.
David, I'm always happy to be here.
Well, before we get started, I need to do a little truth in broadcasting here. You and I have been friends for more than 30 years, and I've been a supporter of your political campaigns from the very beginning, and certainly that makes me biased about you. But it also makes me something of an expert, a Q-list, if you will. And, you know, like Ted Kennedy nationally, I've watched you make universal health care your signature political issue. I want to start by asking you something I've never asked you before off the air. Why? Is there a personal connection for you on this issue?
You know, there really wasn't. When I got to Sacramento in 94, when I was first elected, as you remember, it was really my expertise was in so-called women's issues, you
right.
know, domestic violence and, by extension, family law issues, and kind of expanded it into natural resources and water and all the assignments that I was given. And about 5 years ago, a wonderful group of Health Care for All came to me and said they had been pushing the single-payer plan. They had had an initiative in California that failed. They wanted to consider bringing it again as a bill, and they were interviewing legislators to see who was worthy to be the author. So now, please, 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 Sheila, carry my bill. Please, you've got a great staff. You really get things through. Please. This was, would we deign to let you,
do
this?
Well, you, let's tell people you who don't know, and these are Luddites if they don't know, you were an actress in your previous incarnation, so this was an audition for you.
This was an audition, exactly. They were clearly happy with my answers, so we started working together 4 years ago, brought the bill. It had a real tough sledding because there's a lot of urban mythology out there about single payer, which is completely untrue.
Well, people immediately say it's socialized medicine.
Well, the governor said that in vetoing it last year. But, of course, socialized medicine is the sort of the opposite of what it is. It is a centralized insurance plan. And so it doesn't have the same overhead as other insurance plans. They go up to 30%.
This cuts it down to 10%. Is that right?
Well, actually, it would be probably 5 or less, like
wow.
Medicare, like the VA.
Mm-hmm.
So you put that money directly into health coverage, and you've gone a long way to cover the uninsured right there.
But anyway, let's go back to the history of it. So you passed the audition.
I passed the audition.
And this became, working with this group, Healthcare for All?
Yes.
You began the process of creating legislation, which, as you say, became Senate Bill 840 that made it through both houses in the last session.
That's correct. It was put on the governor's desk, and we're going to do it again this year.
Okay. You know, you said something that was interesting, that attention is the precursor to action.
Mm.
And there's been a lot of attention now on this issue. Is this, even though the governor vetoed it, even though there are now several other plans, his plan, the Speaker of the Assembly has a plan, the State Senate President has a plan, none of which, they're all incremental, they're short-term palliatives. Is it still a good thing that everyone is talking about it?
It's absolutely a good thing. I think that might be the greatest contribution that we've made so far, is that people in America do not focus on universal health care. They've been convinced that health care is a commodity like anything else. They have to buy it. If they can't afford it, they don't get it. And it's sort of hammered and beat us down over the years, this concept, but people had given up. And I think what happened with 840 is that we've really seriously articulated the possibility and the right for universal health care. And those two things together, I think, have brought it completely to the top of the agenda, so that now it's like people are fighting each other to see who can have the health care plan that's going to be adopted. But I think the governor is being very responsive in both senses of the word. He's responding to interest on it, but he's also fearful because he saw how far we got with doing away with the health insurance plans. And his support comes in great measure from insurance companies. And I think he thought he had to look bold, throw in a plan that preserves the insurance companies, and see if he couldn't somehow usurp the subject.
And he got attacked from his own party for what is, in fact, still not a full universal health care plan.
Well, but you know, the danger in that is that it actually gives credibility to his claim that this could be a bipartisan effort.
Right.
It's bipartisan, that is, he thinks, all Democrats and Arnold, and that makes it bipartisan. But the theories behind his plan, the hallmark of which is an individual mandate. In other words, we're going to have universal health insurance because I'm going to make it the law that you have to buy health insurance. That's what's universal about his plan. And it's completely shuck and jive because he does nothing about whether you can afford it.
I'm trying to picture him actually doing a shuck and jive.
Well, right now on crutches, not.
Yeah, it's not an attractive image. But the,
and he's in a lot of pain. I don't want to make any fun of that at all because he really hurt himself.
And we're not making fun of that. We are making fun of his image that, in fact, Californians rejected of this tough guy, I have the right answer to every solution. Mm-hmm. This is what Californians rejected when he went his own way with a series of initiatives and took on what he called the special interests, which were nurses and teachers and such. Is he looking to do this, in your judgment? Now, there, a lot of people nationally looking at Arnold Schwarzenegger say he has reinvented himself. That's how he was reelected by such a large margin. But now that he's passed the ballot box again, is he now going back to that, we're going to do it my way or the highway, or is there someone who might be willing to work on compromise?
He's definitely willing to work on compromise, but his worldview, his understanding of the way things should be, is very, very protective of big business and very protective of insurance companies without using the right wing's rhetoric that he, you know, he abjures. He'll pick a couple of places where he will look like he's doing the right thing, saying, for instance, that if we cover all children, it included undocumented children. And his party went nuts about that.
Right.
Saying that he thinks businesses ought to contribute to the cost of health care. But it's very interesting, the difference between his rhetoric and reality. For instance, in his plan, every business that employs more than 10 people in California would have to pay into a fund or provide health care. Okay, how many businesses is that in California? Less than 20%. 80% of the businesses are 9 people or less. So right off the bat, 80% of the businesses don't have to have health care coverage and don't have to contribute. Of the remaining 20%, only 20% of those don't provide coverage already. And the 80% that do provide it, which is, if you do your math, 16% of all the businesses in California, spending way more than 4%, which is all he would require to be spent.
In other words, there's not enough money in his plan to cover people.
Not enough, and an invitation to reduce coverage. The second terrible thing about it is that he wants a proliferation of bare-bones policies with very high deductibles, lots of out-of-pocket expenses, and very high premiums. He doesn't put it this way, but he has no control over what the premiums are. He's just going to say you have to buy insurance. So boys can buy insurance that don't cover pregnancy. That's what he would like. Only girls, of course, would have to pay for pregnancy.
Funny how that works. But under his plan, there'd be as much as something like $12,500 in deductible?
He said $5,000 in deductibles, and then an additional $7,500, although there's no way to enforce this cap, on your out-of-pocket. So, for instance, let's say you buy a policy that covers you very bare bones for catastrophic whatever, and you break both your legs. Okay, that's not considered catastrophic. So you go in for treatment, and they say, well, you're not covered for this. So we can treat, you know, the ankle, which is catastrophic, and there's a $5,000 deductible, but you'll have to pay for all the rest out of pocket. So he's saying, in addition, $7,500 out of pocket. But above that, he doesn't say what we do. Does the government pay for your heart transplant? No.
So if he had this policy himself right now, and of course he could afford to pay for it out of pocket, but that would be a classic example. This would be money that an average person would not have to pay for two broken legs.
Exactly. So his rhetoric about it is very expansive. But if you, of course, the devil's in the details, and more than the devil, if you look at the plan, it's actually sort of an out-of-control mandate on individuals and taking all the burden off of insurance companies, so who would not have hardly any risk at all under these bare-bones policies, and taking a lot of it off of employers.
My guest is State Senator Sheila Kuehl. She's talking with us by telephone. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Politically Direct on Air America Radio. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Morning Retort with Scott and Sim.
To understand it.
Miss Romney.
What drives people?
Massachusetts governor. If he can't protect his own citizens from tunnels, how will he protect you from terrorists? Done. The campaign is dead. See how easy it was?
It was that easy.
See, that's the problem on the left. You're the problem right there. You think you get all the answers to all the little questions that does not drive a lot of people outside of California, outside of both coasts, outside of California and New York. Northeast. I mean, this is not the world. This is not the center of the universe, Mr. Sims.
Mitt Romney gets the nomination. The tunnels win. Think about it. Tourists, Terra, Earth. Tunnels. Do the math, Scott!
It's very erotic. I'm being turned on by all this talk.
Scott and Sims, mornings 5:30 to 9 on AM 1320, Sacramento's left channel.
At Cache Creek Casino Resort, win fast, win often with Cache Fever Jackpot. Jackpots start at $20,000 and are guaranteed to hit by $30,000. Every time a Cache Fever Jackpot hits, a Cache Club player wins, just for playing with their card. Plus, you can check the Cache Fever Jackpot total and your Cache Club points online now at CacheCreek.com. So join Cache Club today and get the fever. Cache Creek Casino Resort.
No more cell phones in movie theaters. Please, you're not a cardiologist on call. You're a putz whose babysitter wants to know where the ketchup is. And then you tell her in the middle of the movie. Sometimes it's so loud in the theater I can barely hear what the black people are yelling at the screen. There is a simple solution. Put your cell phone on vibrate. And then up your ass. All right, new rule. No more celebrating gastric bypass. Carney Wilson, Al Roker, and now Star Jones are all being heralded by the media for stapling their stomachs shut. They shouldn't be. They're not making a brave choice to change. They're giving money to doctors to reroute their ability to turn food into crap.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320.
This is Politically Direct. He is David Bender. You are listening to Air America Radio.
And we're back. My My guest is State Senator Sheila James Kuehl of California. She is the author of what was Senate Bill 840, vetoed last year by Arnold Schwarzenegger, but it is the plan for single-payer universal health care, which, if passed, would make California, as it has been in the past, a model for the nation. Sheila, are you getting attention from around the country for this effort?
Absolutely, and from the Congress as well, because one of the things that we've been able to do in the last 4 years by having this bill vetted through the legislative process in California is to really develop a solid, well-drafted plan for universal health care that I think would work on a national basis. Of course, we've got a pretty good model on a national basis, Medicare. And to expand it, as I think Representative Conyers has suggested,
right,
to everybody, where everybody pays in a little and everybody gets covered, that's sort of my plan for California.
What is One Care Now?
One Care Now is the organization that's come together, an organization of organizations, Health Care for All, Health Access, and a lot of other organizations that are doing an event in one city in California every day for 365 days to raise awareness about the bill. I'm going to reintroduce it. I think it'll have the same number so we don't have to waste the buttons.
That's always helpful. So again, you're thinking economically. We have savings,
exactly,
even on the buttons. This is good. So you're going to reintroduce it next month, is that right?
That's correct. And so they've made a wonderful video, a 20-plus minute video, that really tells what the deal is and what's going on.
And we'll put a link to it on our website, politicallydirectradio.com, but theirs is onecarenow.org. And you can go there and you can click on both the three-minute sort of précis of this video and the full 22 minutes at onecarenow.org. And I've seen it. I want to encourage people to do that because it really lays it out. And oddly enough, they have this woman who was an actress who is now, and normally they have to go hire someone who doesn't know, who has to read the lines. Did you write your own script for this?
No, the funny thing is, I look at myself in this film and I'm so enthusiastic. And I'm thinking of the way we made it, because it had a script, and Don would say, the director would say, Don Schroeder, here's what I want you to say, yada, 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 for this line. And I would kind of quickly take it in, and then he would go, okay. Then I would say it back at him, kind of in my own words. But I noticed on the film that I'm so enthusiastic in saying it, but really I'm just trying to remember what it is I'm supposed to say at that moment. But the film is really good.
It is good.
They're all professionals from our wonderful film industry here that did it completely on a volunteer basis.
Again, what I said at the outset, I want to say now as we close on this topic, but I'm not going to let you go without one other line of inquiry. At the beginning, I said this is a campaign. This is a crusade. You've made it your own. I am enormously encouraged. It's something, I've worked for and with Senator Kennedy for a long time, and he's been on this issue, as you know, almost for 35 years, most of his Senate career. And there will come a time when we see universal single health care achieved. But it's going to happen because people like Ted Kennedy nationally and people like Sheila Kuehl in California are taking it on and won't let it go until we get it done. And I am enormously, personally, grateful for that, but also really excited to see that it is moving now. And maybe this is the time. Maybe it took this much time to get to this level of acceptance in the general public.
Well, I think it's a matter of understanding, too. There's so much mythology about it that people forget that Wilbur Cohn, who was in FDR's administration, worked on Medicare all the way through until we got it. And
yeah,
it was because we dispelled the myths. It was because we had the right Congress and the right president.
That was 30 years.
And this, I think, won't take 30 years because we'll have another governor in 2010, and I'm hoping it'll be someone who will sign single payer.
Any chance it could be Sheila Kuehl?
I don't think so, but there's a real chance it could be Antonio Villaraigosa, who was Speaker when I was in the Assembly and who is Mayor of
Los Angeles
right, and a real good guy.
And a champion of this issue.
Yes.
I can't let you go without pointing out that it was about 4 years ago right now, amazingly enough, 4 years ago, that we were on the verge of another presidential election. And you and I sat down with a man who I was working with at the time, the former governor of Vermont, someone who actually had made health care one of his own chief issues, Howard Dean. And I remember you saying something just sort of off the cuff about how you wanted to support someone from the Democratic wing of the Democratic Party. Amazingly enough, Howard heard that and decided that he wanted to be that guy. Who do you see now as potentially representing the Democratic wing of the Democratic Party nationally.
Mm. Well, unfortunately, I don't see someone that clearly. I mean, I think Mr. Feingold, who's taken himself out of the race, had the greatest potential. But it's very difficult to say because people are being quite cautious, especially on the war still.
Barack Obama?
Well, Barack Obama, I think, is a wonderful, enlightened, very articulate man. I don't hear enough about his sort of his absolutes, his bottom lines yet. I like him very much. You know, the truth is I've always liked Hillary all along as well. She's disappointed me, but I'm not one of those people that says, okay, it's over, you know, with you. Because
right.
I want to see what kind of a president a person would be. And for me, it's still too difficult to tell.
Well, I'm also going to encourage you to take another look at John Edwards, who
who won David Mixner's poll on his new website. I noticed.
Is that right? Tell me what that is. Mixner has.
Well, I don't know. I got a an email from David Mixner that he's got a new website, and I believe he's putting out information and taking in information. And I got an email from him saying that he had asked people to just do a sort of straw vote. And John Edwards was the pick, which I thought was quite interesting.
Well, for people who don't know, David Mixner has been a leader in gay rights, civil rights, anti-war efforts for 4 decades. And for him to be involved and to be putting out information, it's a very good sign, actually.
Well, also because he was the first person that ever spoke to me about Bill Clinton, about whom I'd never heard a word.
Exactly right.
When he was, still governor of Arkansas.
They'd been longtime friends. And,
right.
And I believe it was David Mixner who brought Bill Clinton to the first gay event that a president of the United States or candidate for president ever attended. It was the Human Rights Campaign event, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting thing about John Edwards. I think it's going to be a very interesting campaign, and I like to really take a look at folks and see where they are. I'm not too much of a purist about everything, but I like the person that sort of is most like me, which I think is, John Steinbeck said, when people are running for office, we want them to be just who we are, and after they win, we want them to be better than us.
Well, and that means we want to have a drink with ourselves, which is a little disconcerting if you think about it. Sheila Kuehl, thank you for joining us on Politically Direct. Thank you for being like you and representing the Democratic wing of the Democratic Party. Again, it is onecarenow.org where people can go and help and participate in this effort. We're going to have you back when SB 840 has been passed again and signed into law.
Well, thank you, David.
LeftChannel.com CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. Winter's wrath is upon us now. A major storm has brought snow, sleet, and ice from the plains to Maine. CBS News correspondent Kelly Kobiea is in Muskogee, Oklahoma.
If you can imagine a hurricane but frozen, that's kind of what Muskogee looks like right now. These trees are just snapped in two. They are covered, every last branch and limb, in an inch of ice, encased in that ice, and they are just being weighed down by it. The power companies can barely get around the roads, let alone fix the power lines, and that's not necessarily because there's ice on the roads. It's because there are massive branches covered in ice blocking the roads.
The number of homes and businesses without power is in the hundreds of thousands. KRLD Radio's Chuck Schechner has the story in Dallas.
Many drivers had to clear ice-covered windshields, then face ice-covered roads. Peter Kendrick, among those finding the job of getting to the job, very difficult.
It's like hit some ice and slid into the guardrail.
This woman saw a car skidding right toward her along Interstate 20 and intentionally headed for the ditch.
I was just trying to lessen the blow by hitting something soft instead of something hard.
The forecast of dropping temperature tonight could refreeze moisture already on the roads. Chuck Schechner, CBS News, Dallas.
Some cities have opened emergency shelters for people to keep warm. In St. Charles, Missouri, fire official Brian Ezell urges the elderly to leave their powerless homes.
Temperatures in the houses are getting in the 30s and 40s now. That's just not a good environment for somebody with health issues.
Already at least 39 deaths are blamed on the storm. The term heads will roll certainly applies to the old regime in Iraq. Two of Saddam Hussein's henchmen were hanged today. And an official government video shown to reporters in Baghdad shows that one of them, Saddam's half-brother, Barzan Ibrahim, was decapitated. He and former intelligence chief Awad Hamad al-Bandar were executed in the same gallows where Saddam was hanged on December 30th. The outgoing U.S. commander in Iraq, General George Casey, cautioned today that the new strategy will take time to take hold.
It's not going to happen overnight. I think you'll see a gradual evolution over the next 2 to 3 months, and then you'll see things continue to get better out through the spring, out through the summer and fall. But it'll take some time.
Casey confirmed that several thousand additional troops have already arrived in Baghdad. Martin Luther King Jr. was remembered today on what would have been his 78th birthday. Reporter Pete Combs has the story in Atlanta.
Atlanta Mayor Shirley Franklin stood in for the late Coretta Scott King as Grand Marshal of the King Day Parade as thousands marched through downtown.
We all miss Mrs. King.
Can King's message of nonviolence, tolerance, and respect outlive both the civil rights leader and his wife? Franklin doesn't hesitate when she answers.
I believe the message is strong enough to endure for lifetimes to come.
Pete Combs, CBS News, Atlanta.
The stock market was closed for the King holiday. This is CBS News.
Now, you have a very unique accounting system for your boutique.
Yep. I designed my own spreadsheet.
Wow, looks complicated.
That's why I have a cheat sheet for my spreadsheet.
That is one big cheat sheet.
That's just the index.
You know, there's an easier way to manage your business.
Really?
Yeah, QuickBooks. You can be up and running in under 15 minutes. With just a few clicks, QuickBooks software lets you send invoices, see who's paid and who hasn't. It even makes tax time a cinch.
I'm switching.
Great.
Can you help me fold this back up?
I doubt it. QuickBooks. Better, faster, simpler. Get it at Staples, Office Depot, or Sam's Club.
Paula Sela is a real Geico customer, not an actor. So to help tell her story, we hired that announcer guy from the movies.
When the storm hit, both our cars were totally underwater.
In a world where both of our cars were totally underwater,
we thought it would take forever to get some help.
But a new wind was about to blow.
With Geico, we had our check in 2 days.
Payback. This time, it's for real.
Geico. Real service, real savings.
If there were better opportunities south of the border, there wouldn't be so many people sneaking into the United States. CBS News reporter Adrian Bard tells us there was a development today.
Mexico's president announced a jobs program that could stem the flow of Mexican migrant workers to the U.S. Felipe Calderon's plan is aimed at those entering the job market for the first time. Employers who hire them will get a break on Social Security contributions. Workers will receive free medical and daycare and pension plans. Employment as the only path out of poverty, the Harvard-educated leader called the $300 million plan a good start. Adrian Bard, CBS News, Mexico City.
A suspected drug kingpin described by the FBI as the leader of Colombia's most powerful and violent drug trafficking organization has been captured after a four-hour shootout with Colombian police. The United States had offered a $5 million reward for Eugenio Montoya's arrest. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
Metro.
The Internet.
It's not something that you just dump something on. It's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes. It really is the Internet consumer bill of rights. Because you got tangled up with all of these things that are going on the Internet commercially. The world has turned against this. If your own personal Internet, that is you and me.
You and me, Internet,
right? Tubes. The Internet is not something that you just dump something on. It's not a big truck.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
It's a series of tubes.
Time for Eco Talk with host Betsy Rosenberg.
She'll be great. She's a very smart, capable person who knows exactly what took place and will lay out the facts. And that's what the American people want to see.
I had a dream the other night. Now, in my dream, our national bird had become the ostrich.
And welcome to EcoTalk, your one-stop shopping for the latest on a changing climate, environmentally and politically. And as is often the case here, we are going to be focusing on global warming. But as always the case, we have some interesting and seldom heard voices behind the news. In 2006, that was just last year, New York Times climate reporter Andy Revkin was swift-voted by the very folks who swift-voted John Kerry for Revkin's reporting on climate change, as well as his book, The North Pole Was Here, aimed at kids and families. Well, what a difference a year can make. On New Year's Day 2007, the New York Times published an article by Revkin titled A New Middle Stance Emerges in Debate Over Climate, setting off a firestorm on Enviro blogs and response editorials written by, among others, Grist Magazine staff writer David Roberts. The questions raised by Revkin's articles have invigorated, she said, the dialogue.
Win fast, win often. The Cash Fever jackpot starts at $20,000 and guaranteed to hit by $30,000. Only at Cash Creek Casino Resort. And now you can check the growing jackpot anytime online at cashcreek.com.
Staff writer David Roberts. The questions raised by Revkin's articles have invigorated, she said, the dialogue.
Win fast, win often. The Cash Fever jackpot starts at $20,000 and guaranteed to hit by $30,000. Only at Cash Creek Casino Resort. And now you can check the growing jackpot anytime online at cashcreek.com.
Switch to Metro PCS and pay by the month, not by the minute. $40 a month, all the local and long-distance calls you can make anytime, and no contract. Call 888-8-METRO-8, Metro PCS.
Hello.
Permission to speak freely. Long distance in the continental U.S., taxes and fees not included. Switch to Metro PCS and pay by the month, not by the minute. $40 a month, all the local and long-distance calls you can make anytime, and no contract. Call 888-8-METRO-8, Metro PCS.
Hello.
Permission to speak freely. Long distance in the continental U.S., taxes and fees not included. Switch to Metro PCS and pay by the month, not by the minute. $40 a month, all the local and long distance calls you can make anytime, and no contract. Call 888-8-METRO-8, Metro PCS.
Hello.
Permission to speak freely. Long distance in the continental U.S., taxes and fees not included.